welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 237. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me today, Greg Leahy.
Hello.
James Jones.
Hi.
And John Lindemann.
Always a pleasure, Johnny.
It is a pleasure. Is always it? With you, John.
Always.
We do have an exciting show for you today. Our new business is jam-packed with 3DS content and a few other little goodies as well.
Well, for two of us.
Yes. You're going to hear a lot from James and Greg on this episode because after the break, when we get to our listener mail, we have a few emails about 3DS as well, although not all of them. So there'll be some variety, but that is the topic du jour. And be sure to stay tuned through all the way to the end of the show, because we are going to announce our next retroactive game at the end. It's our selection. It's the editor's choice.
F you guys.
And so we have between now and then to actually figure out what that's going to be. So kicking off new business, James.
Yes.
How's that 3DS going for you?
It's going well. I'm feeling the 3D life.
You're living in 3D, buddy.
I'm living in 3D. My life has dimensions now.
Dude, that's so deep.
But no, actually, before I get into the games, there is something I want to say about the system itself and living the 3D life or whatever kind of bullshit jokes we've been making about it. How my life's been changed, the perception's been altered. If you play the 3DS for a while, you know, like an hour or so, which is way over the limit they recommend, but F them. I don't care.
Crazy.
I don't feel any uncomfortableness playing it, so I'm pretty much free to play it as long as I want. But what I'll notice is if I put it down and then look at my computer screen or a TV, they'll have the illusion of depth. And I was wondering if Greg's noticed this.
I have a little bit, yeah.
I noticed it even at E3 last year.
It's very weird.
So is that text popping out of my
laptop? Yeah, like the text comes off the page. It's completely insane. I don't know why it's doing it.
3DS, so amazing. It makes everything else 3D.
Yes. So I'm actually working on a blog post for it with something called, like, the 3DS upgraded my netbook. It's unbelievable. You just look at it, you're like, first time I noticed, I'm like, wait, what the fuck? And I'm like rubbing my eyes going, what is wrong? Damn. You really are magic. You know that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it messes with the way that your eyes interpret depth. And when you play it, especially if you play it for a long time, like I'm sure you are, I think it sort of temporarily rewires your expectations of how your eyes discern the difference in depths, you know, because of that trickery that the screen's doing. And so then you look at it, and when you look at things that actually have depth, I mean, if you think about it, the way the screen on the 3DS works is not that different from the way your eyes work. You have two eyes, they see things at slightly different angles, and they triangulate a depth based on how far apart the two images are, and all that stuff happens in your brain, and you don't think about it. So I think it's just that your brain, like, overcompensates when it looks at the 3DS screen, and then it has to dial itself back down. It's like there's a slider on the side of your head, and you have to pull it back down a little once you turn the system off.
It's kind of disconcerting the first time you observe it, and then afterwards you're like trying to trigger it by playing for really long sessions and staring at paper. Since I know Greg and I have some overlap, I'm going to go through the games that I have that I don't believe Greg has.
Yeah, I've only got one, so you know, you know where that overlap is.
We'll go good to not good. So I took advantage of the Toys R Us 2-for-1.5 deal and got two games. So I got Street Fighter 4 3D Edition. My first impressions are, I forgot how truly terrible I am at Street Fighter. Like, over the 20 years since Street Fighter 2 came out, and I became acquainted with it and learned its ways, and by that I mean learned that I was going to lose many, many times. And then I played it for maybe 5 or 6 years. I mean, I had a lot of time with Street Fighter 2. And then in the 15 or so years that have passed, how good I was at that game has slowly altered in my mind to me thinking, I was pretty good at that game. If I went back to me, say, at 10, and I asked, how good are you at Street Fighter 2? God, I'm awful. But me at 25 seems to believe that me in 10 was like a Street Fighter badass. Well, that's not the case. And Street Fighter 4 has reminded me that I really suck at Street Fighter. So, like, I've been playing the arcade mode mostly because I really, really suck, and I'm trying to get better at it. And what I've learned is that I can't beat medium. I lose. So I've been playing it on easy, which is depressing. And I've learned that the four buttons on the touchscreen that let you use special attacks, they're actually kind of a crutch. So I'm not getting better because I'm just slamming on Blanca's roll attack over and over and over again because it works.
Now, aren't there two different tiers of what you're allowed to put on the touchscreen? Maybe this only applies to online. I'm not sure.
So in the online mode, you can either play with it on or off, and both opponents are playing by the same rules.
Right. I thought I'd heard, and maybe I just misunderstood this, but I thought I'd heard that there was basically like one version of it where you could put sort of basic moves on there, maybe things that required you to push three buttons at once or something like that, like your ultras or whatever, supers, whatever they're called. And, you know, maybe something like a Shoryuken, which is maybe difficult to do with the slide pad or whatever.
Maybe it is customizable. I haven't seen where to customize it. And if it is, that'll be great. Right now I've got the right two are stuff like Shoryuken. And on the left hand are like the super attacks you have to build up the gauges for. Mm-hmm. So you basically get two that you can do at any time and two you can only do when the gauge is full.
Hmm.
But you can kind of spam them and win, unfortunately. Or fortunately for me, I guess is probably a better way of putting it.
And there's no cooldown or anything like that?
No, not really.
Even for like a Hadouken or something, you can just use it over and over immediately?
I mean, they have an animation that has to complete.
Yeah.
So you can't just be like going like... Although I wish you could, like this straight beam of blue energy going across the screen.
I have a further comment on that I will save for a listener email later in the show, but hold that thought.
So what I've observed actually playing the game, though, is besides the fact that I'm really bad at it, is that the game itself is actually like a really solid fighting game, even on a handheld, which makes me think, kind of wonder why we haven't had a lot of solid fighting games before this point, but... Be that as it may, widescreen really works for fighters. I don't understand how we ever lived without it before. And the 3D effect is actually really good. Even if you're not doing that over-the-shoulder stuff, the character models have depth to them, like really perceivable depth. So it almost looks like there's two figurines fighting in a diorama, which is kind of neat. It's fun. I haven't had a chance to do any online play yet. I've got my trophies, and by some sheer luck, I got a bunch of really good trophies when I did the lotto drawing, and I've walked around with my DS and I found no one at all.
Yeah,
I've never street passed another person, even though I walked through a game store with it in my pocket. I'm curious how that mode's gonna work. I would like to try it out, but I may never get to it because
I wonder if you went, James. You live fairly close to a university campus, right?
Yes. By the way, go Rams.
I don't know if you. If you have access to the campus, but you know, certainly going to a football game or a basketball game, I think there's a chance. But even just maybe just walking around campus,
I mean, that seems
like a kind of a place where there might be a lot of people trying to get street pass.
There are like 35,000 students, so yeah, it's in the middle of a city.
Yeah,
yeah. Cause I was actually on campus Sunday after the Elite Eight win and forgot to bring it with me.
Oh,
which is probably a good thing because it kind of turned into half a riot. So. You know. People were like climbing up. I mean, we've never been to the Final Four before. Cut us some slack. People are like climbing up light posts, and it was just dumb. But it probably would have been destroyed anyway, so it's probably for the best. The other game that I know Greg doesn't have because he's not a fool is Rayman 3D, which is Rayman 2: The Great Escape, despite the fact that Ubisoft had the ultimate opportunity to make a Rayman 3 pun. Nice job, Ubisoft.
Yeah. Well, there is a Rayman 3, but...
Yes, there is.
It's not really as well-liked as Rayman 2.
It's still a good game. It's not the sort of mindshare classic that Rayman 2 is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's already a Rayman 2 that the 3DS can play.
Yes.
Because it can play the DS launch game Rayman 2. Because Ubisoft is fucking unoriginal. So, Rayman 3D is also, as you can guess, Rayman 2: The Great Escape. Is a port of the Dreamcast version versus the DS, which is a port of the N64 version. And it's exactly the same game. Like, imperceivably different. I have the strategy guide that I got as a gift when Rayman 2 came out in 1999. And I have looked at it. There is nothing different.
Wow.
Well, how does it look?
It looks like a Dreamcast game. So it looks like a half generation behind everything else on the 3DS.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what, like, Ocarina of Time's going to end up looking like.
Yeah, I know. And that's not really redeemable either. Mm-hmm. But Rayman has aged more than Ocarina of Time. I mean, I don't mean visually. I mean as gameplay-wise.
Yeah.
Because it relies on platformer constraints that existed in 1999, which is smaller spaces, collect-a-thons, random item gated levels. Like, you need to have 900 golden whatevers to open this door. Bullshittery like that. It's all the stuff that we don't really see in games or in that genre as much anymore. I mean, in a world where Galaxy exists, Rayman 2 cannot sell for $40.
Yeah.
It just can't.
So it's full price.
It's 40 bucks.
Very full price.
That is how much Rayman 2 retailed for, most likely, on the Dreamcast. Because a lot of Dreamcast games are 40 bucks.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was probably 60 on N64.
Yeah, it probably was. But I believe the Dreamcast version is a port of the N64 version, so this might actually be a port of a port.
Well, it's an upgraded version.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the Dreamcast version is, I think most people consider that to be sort of the seminal version. Either that or maybe like PS2.
It came out like a year later than the N64 version, so they polished a little bit more, I think. But I mean, it's this. I played the N64 version, and I have not noticed anything that different. Even visually, it's not that much better than the N64 version.
Well, how's the 3D effect for it?
Kind of botched.
Does it look like a post-converted movie or something?
Yeah, a little bit. what I've noticed is that of the three games I have, it has the smallest sweet spot. So, like, Street Fighter 4, the sweet spot's actually really big. I can move the screen a bit and be okay. And the further I push the screen back from my face, the deeper the image looks. But on this game, if I start to move it around, I get ghosting pretty quickly. Right. So I've had to turn the 3D down a bit. The other issue they have is there's lots of crap floating around in this game. There's just like particle effects and stuff that they had in there to show off what they could do on the Dreamcast, I guess.
Yeah.
But when that gets really close to the front of the screen, even if you're in the sweet spot, it ghosts really bad. And it might not be because of the 3D effect. It might just be because it wasn't meant to be in the forefront when they originally made the art asset.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe kind of lazy layering filter that they ran over the code to choose what's in the front and what's in the back.
I mean, there's a lot of ports in the 3DS launch lineup. Rayman 2 is actually already ported to the iOS platform. I mean, we have games like Asphalt, which is a port of a game for Android phones. But this has got to be the laziest port of the launch lineup.
Well, it's the oldest port, right?
Yeah, by like 8 years.
Yeah.
This is a 12-year-old game being ported to your handhelds for the second time. Thanks, Ubisoft. It's going to get a high review, as you can guess.
Yeah, yeah.
It is what it is, but you got to do better than this. There's a point where it's just not worth it, and they clearly crossed that point. Anyway, my third game is somewhere between Rayman and Street Fighter 4. It's Pilot Wings, which I take it Greg has. I'll let him talk about it since it's his game.
Well, I've played it quite a bit. I haven't really played much else in the past week for very long. I've cleared all the missions now, 3 stars on the main set. I guess this could be considered a spoiler, but basically you open up what appears to be all the classes and then you get a passing grade on all of them, let's say, and they just say, oh, they beat it with 3 stars, and that's it. Well, once you do actually beat them all with 3 stars, it does open up a sort of final super bonus class that involves the extra vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds exactly like Excite Truck and Excite Bots.
Yeah, I mean, it is only a handful of missions, so it's not like a big deal. It's not like Mirror Mode or something in Excite Truck, which is like a whole alternate kind of mode or anything. It's just a nice little bonus, because the thing is, with those alternate vehicles that tend to be like, you know, a bit trickier to handle, because you've got the jet plane, which is a lot faster. And
it's maddeningly fast.
It's way, way faster than the normal plane, or yeah, the super rocket pack is similar.
Which is completely uncontrollable.
And then you've got the pedal glider, which the main thing with that is it just kind of makes the hang glider more involved. Because obviously the thing with hang glider, it's all these little fine increments. You know, it's all about the maintenance of speed and getting the sort of trade-off right of, you know, getting altitude from a thermal but not coming to a stop.
Right.
It's kind of about economy of movement, right? You don't want to do a lot of overturning and correcting because then you're bleeding off speed that you can't back.
You will lose velocity if you have to correct too much. So you've got to plot a course, get it right. It almost feels like sailing, you know, at times. But with the pedal glider, you've got more influence over your kind of velocity because with button mashing, and it's got like the 3 hearts, just like the cycling in Wii Sports Resort.
Yes.
For your stamina. So that's another thing that's kind of brought in from that. You can give it a bit of a pedal and sort of give yourself a push, essentially. So that can help in terms of where you are trying to change direction.
But it's a worse hang glider. is the downside.
It's also broader. Like, if you're trying to, like, get some, you know, maybe one of those point capsules and they're in the middle of, like, those airborne spiky mines or something, sometimes you could feel like it's actually quite a lot harder in the pedal glider because of how much wider it is. So the point is, you've got those three vehicles now in the main game, in the main missions, like, you only use them once each, I think.
Right.
So it's nice that they get reprised in this sort of final unlockable class because they are quite a fair bit more taxing and stuff. So it's a nice reward for getting the 3 stars on everything, but it's not like anything major. I mean, obviously, it's not a particularly long game to play through. I mean, I found it pretty satisfying for the amount of time I was playing. You know, the way the controls are, the way the missions are structured, you can feel yourself getting better. You know, you want to keep going to improve, and you know, you can suddenly see that score kind of your inch up on a bunch of fronts here, because you get scored on like how quickly you do everything in addition to how accurately you do everything. So sometimes you could say, oh god, you know, that was a really good run, what did I do wrong? And then you look at the score breakdown and it's like, oh, but you only got like 7 points for time out of 30 because right. you were just too careful or something, you know. You so that kind of pressurizes you to do everything, you know, in a more clutch fashion. So it's very satisfying on pretty much every level, apart from, I think for me, not so much the missions, but just you want more locations, really. You know, when you think of Pilot Week 64, which had the 4 different islands, you know, if you could spread missions out over a bunch of different locations, that would, I think, make a big difference, because it's just be more kind of stuff to mess around in, especially I think with the 3D effect at times, because some of the times where I feel like it's most impressive is really kind of in the most built up areas of the island. So say if you're jetpacking right around the circumference of the volcano and you know, you've got the rock kind of towering over you and stuff, but the thing is, that's not a lot of what there is in Wuhu Island, where if you can imagine something like Pilot Week 64, where you go through the replica of the Grand Canyon or something, that would be a lot more apparent, I think. So it does suffer for not having that variety and richness of sites, but the soundtrack's great. It's perfect for the game, and it makes it just relaxing to play. And I think I've gotten more out of the free flight mode than I was expecting, because I didn't get a lot out of that on Wii Sports Resort.
Right.
But the thing about it is, and I've said this, you know, about many things over various shows, but in portable form, it's just more appealing to me. I'm more likely to kind of absentmindedly just go into it, listen to the music, and just, you know, find whatever doodads are left to find, you know, balloons or like these stunt rings for the plane where you have to be doing a certain maneuver as you go through it or whatever. You know, it's kind of absent-minded, relaxing fun, whereas I'm not going to sit in front of a console for that. So it does work in that way, but it is just kind of transplanted in for Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, I've not gotten through... So I've gotten through all the main missions, but I'm still stuck on the getting the 5... or getting the three stars on everything.
Right.
So about halfway through that, and some of them, I just can't figure out how you manage to get 3 stars on like some of the jetpack ones.
Yeah, like I said, it's at certain times you're like, what did I do wrong? What could I do better? But if you look, especially look at the points breakdown, there'll be something there that's staring you in the face. Like, holy, I'm leaving a lot of points on the table in that category. Let's think about this, because in the end, actually, the 3 stars were not as difficult as I thought they would be. And the whole game is pretty forgiving, actually, compared to previous Pilot Weeks. I mean, for instance, first and foremost, in my mind, thinking about the bane of my existence in Pilot Week 64, the wind. There is no wind. So if you're like landing the hang glider or the jetpack to a lesser extent, that was a big wrench in the works when you was playing sort of like Pilot Week 64. Whereas here, it's a lot more predictable. You can have pretty much a sort of stock approach to a landing every time, because you haven't got that variable in the mix. So, I mean, there's a couple where it's a real challenge, like the hang glider mission where you have to reach an altitude of 500 meters or whatever it is, and then land. Like, that's hard because it's fundamentally different from every other landing you've accomplished, because you're kind of spiraling down towards it, but obviously you can't go too fast, otherwise you'll crash.
Well, and you have to, and if you land too early, you don't get...
Yeah, you get penalised for landing early.
Badly.
I was like, oh, I've nailed it this time. I've reached the 500 so quickly, I'm going to land with 20 seconds to spare. This is going to be a 3-star score. He's, oh, no, that's too early. Oh, shit. I've got nothing.
You're too good. Sorry.
I landed 3 seconds early and lost 15 points from time.
Oh.
3 seconds?
That's really kind of strange.
It does tell you.
It says as close to 3 minutes as possible.
As close to 3 minutes after. Oh, like, as close after. Okay. It does, but once you've tried it like a bunch of times, you've come back and forth with different missions, so you've just got to forget that, and you're just like aiming for 3 minutes as a point target, you know, a symmetrical point target.
This is where I want to be. I want to be on the ground at 3 minutes. No, you don't. You want to be on the ground. You want to be getting on the ground at 3 minutes.
I mean, it is pretty forgiving, and you know, the physics are probably like the most easy and the most accessible that they've been in a Pilot Wings game. You know, like landing in general is just not as hard as it's been in other Pilot Wings games.
I mean, I'm really shocked to hear you say that there's no wind in the game. That seems like a massive omission in a game about flying.
I know what you mean.
I'm shocked that it would be that. I mean, that honestly kind of smacks of being dumbed down, or else we couldn't figure out how to make it work in our physics engine before we had to ship it.
Yeah, no, that I think is probably the bigger thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking at ways to extend the life of this game, I would think having multiple difficulty levels where you can change the amount of wind would be a really easy way to do it if your physics model does wind.
Yeah, I honestly think, you know, as appears to be the case with a lot of aspects of the game, there probably just wasn't the time to get it right, and, you know, so they took the easy option. But it's not as if you don't have a sense of skill and improvement. You know, there is still definite nuance to the gameplay, you know, especially handling the hang glider and how best to come out of thermals and stuff. You know, at first I was just completely hopeless, and it took me quite a while to master that. So it's not as if there isn't some sort of sophistication in the gameplay at all.
See, to me, the jetpacks are where the game really can beat you up pretty badly.
I had a real affinity for the jetpack missions.
I find that it's pretty easy to get to where you want to go, but it's more difficult to keep consistently going. Like, you have to do stopping to try to adjust yourself.
I mean, again, it's a little bit of a kind of similar principle to, you know, kind of conservation of movement with the hang glider from the point of view. What you want to do is, obviously, if you just jet forward, you'll lose altitude. Right. So you need to occasionally move it so you jet up to maintain that. But what you don't want to do is jet forward, lose a lot of altitude, then jet straight back up again, you know, because that way you're slowing
down. You lose momentum,
What you need is just rock back and forth on the slide pad every now and again. The fact that the circle pad, I should say, works so well for stuff like that kind of subtle rocking back and forth, is really satisfying. I mean, there's a lot of things I really enjoy about this that are related to the novelty of the system. Obviously, the 3D effect, you know, it is very attractive. For a portable game, you know, I haven't played a portable game this attractive, so there's a sort of novelty associated with that. And also the controls with the circle pad as well. I mean, it's very much a game for the moment.
Right, this game probably won't do it in 3 years.
I still think there's plenty of things that are fundamentally sound about it, but they would not be as engaging were it not now.
Right.
But as I said, I mean, as it's functioned for me, I have not been looking for, you know, some sort of opus to play on my 3DS. I've got plenty of other stuff to play. A friend was kind enough to lend me a copy of Mass Effect 2 for the PS3, which I have not touched. So if I'm looking for
an opus right there.
Looking for something substantial to play, I've got plenty of other avenues on other systems. So, yeah, but for me, Pilot Wings was the right game at the right time to just sort of, you know, dip my toe in the 3DS waters.
Have you guys seen any indication that there might be some kind of online hooks in Pilot Wings Resort?
No. I mean, it's quite surprising that there really is so little kind of additional features. You know, I mean, obviously, Wii Sports Resort had a two-player mode, didn't it? That dogfight thing, which I didn't really dabble in. But, you know, that isn't reprised in, like, download play form. There's no Street Pass.
I mean, this game seems so ripe for a Mario Kart Wii kind of mission delivery thing, where they just set up patterns of rings in the sky and give you a time limit, and just do like these weekly competitions where you do it and it uploads your time, and then they announce who had the best time. I mean, that seems kind of easy to do, and it's a way to squeeze more gameplay out of
the same settings,
sort of
again,
small scope game like this.
No, I agree. It's Monster Games that develops it, the developers of Excite Truck and Excite Bots, but it doesn't seem like Nintendo had any ambitions for this other than to get it out by launch.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I mean, it functions well as a launch game in certain key aspects, and you know, I probably wouldn't get a lot out of multiplayer or Street Pass, as kind of James has alluded to. I have no expectation of that yielding any very satisfying results anytime soon. But yeah, it's a shame, because I think the real shame of it, in a way, if you're someone who's enjoyed Pilot Wings games before, and you could say this in the previous case as well, you know they're never going to make another Pilot Wings for the same system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was about to say that. It's like, I wouldn't feel so down on Pilot Wings Resort if I felt confident that there'd be a Pilot Wings Resort 2 next year that doubles the vehicles and adds way more stuff and online features and all kinds of crazy stuff. Honestly, I don't expect to see another Pilot Wings game for at least 5 years, and by that time, I don't think they're going to feel any pressure to have learned anything from their experience.
No, I mean,
with this
it's just—I mean, look, it's first time for everything, but the overwhelming likelihood seems to be that, you know, we've had Pilot Wings on the Super Nintendo, we've had Pilot Wings in the N64, and, you know, I mean, the N64 game, I think, had quite a robust feature set, actually, for a launch game. You had a lot of different vehicles in terms of, like, mini-game stuff, like you had cannon, the shooting thing, or those crazy hopping boots that you just sort of jumped across the islands and stuff, you know, all sorts of wacky stuff that this game doesn't have. But you know, you could still have had, you know, a refined sequel that could have taken it in a bunch of different places. It could have been even better, but it never happens, because it's just like, clearly Nintendo has an idea that this sort of game is only really viable at launch, you know, perhaps for some of the reasons that I kind of spoke about. So yeah, this is the only Pilot Wings we've got for 15 years, and it's the only Pilot Wings we're going to get in all likelihood for another 5.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like it was just the kind of series where, you know, it didn't really start out intending to be a series at all. It was just, you know, some stuff that they just spit it out and said, hey, people kind of like that game, so let's just keep doing that because it's a viable formula for a tech demo.
And they always hand it off to other developers, a good paradigm in the case of the N64 era and then Monster Games now. You know, it's not some cherished thing that all the developers
there's not going to be a Pilot Wings renaissance in the next in the next Super Smash Brothers game.
I suppose Excite Bots was kind of like Excite Truck Redux in a way, so if you were going to follow that model, but then I don't know why they would, considering that bombed.
I think it can't bomb if it doesn't get released.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I'm not impugning the game for the reason why it bombed. I like the game just fine, but it did bomb. That is a fact.
As a sequel, critically, I think Excite Bots is an excellent sequel to Excite Truck.
Yes.
It really does almost everything that I would want it to do. So, I mean, they took away the SD card support, but by that time I was already playing a lot of video games with my iPod on anyway.
So you weren't listening to the Butt Rock?
No, and the music's slightly better, but
slightly worse.
I think Excitebots is better in every way, and it adds a very robust online multiplayer feature that people are still playing and is really fun, and it has a lot more content, it has a lot more variety in the vehicles, it has just tons of stuff to unlock, and you know, I think the level designs are more fun. So I would love for Monster to get a chance to do, you know, Pilot Bots Resort Plus or whatever.
Yeah, transforming robot airplanes, Starscream.
Pilot Wings Gundam or something.
Yes, I'd buy that game.
That would actually be pretty awesome.
You get to start destroying Woohoo Island for an indiscernible reason.
Maybe we shouldn't write it off entirely, but
Yeah, we should.
I would be very pleased with that. For Pilot Wings to finally get the chance to not have the launch shackles on it.
For it to be an actual franchise.
Yeah, and also just because, I mean, this game at its core, I think, is very, very good. I mean, it is a little bit, you could say, watered down in terms of, because the vehicle variety is not there and you know, the wind and all that kind of stuff that you've had in previous Pilot Wings games before. But what is there is very, very good. And I honestly can't, having already owned Street Fighter and stuff like that, there is nothing else that I could imagine would have introduced me to the 3DS as well as this has, because the 3D effect really works for me. I've had no headaches or anything. It's just been very, like I said, it's been relaxing. It's been pleasurable.
Yeah, I can't say I've had any of the so-called headache experience with the 3DS, except for ones induced by Rayman, but that's not related to the game, the 3D effect. That's more related to me contemplating what the hell's going on at Ubisoft.
I have one more quick question about Pilot Wings for the two of you guys. Do you think you'll still be playing it next week?
I probably will, because I haven't unlocked that mode yet.
You've got more on your plate, so you're spreading it thinner, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly kind of expected that I would, despite, as I said, not having anything else to play on 3DS, I've got other things I could be playing for other systems. So I honestly expected to take my time with it a lot more and spread it out, but it was addictive. I just kept coming back. I was like, you know, I'm this close to getting a 3-star now, not next week. Let's do it now.
All right.
So all I've got to do really is a couple of things in free flight and the last few stars. Like, I've got the 3 stars to get on the secret mission. So by next week, I should probably have done everything, but I could see myself coming back to it just as a little relaxing diversion. I did get a castle made in my honor for finding all the information points.
Nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Have you unlocked the dioramas?
Yeah, they're
what are they? I'm like, I don't want to fly through 20 effing
rings. So you get them for, like, so each free flight mode, you're divided into the 3 vehicle classes, has right. some sort of extra task. So with the jetpack, is finding these little presents with me trophies in them. With the planes, it's the stunt rings that I mentioned earlier, and then with the glider, it's these golden rings. And for each, like, so if you, there's 60 of those scattered around Weehoo Island, and if you get a third of them, you get a diorama, and two thirds and all of them, you get different dioramas. And they're just, you know, little, like, first of all, they're just your character model in that vehicle.
Oh, and God.
Then the next diorama is like, okay, so here's you in a jetpack next to the lighthouse or something.
Aww.
And I haven't unlocked the third tier, any of the third tier ones. So, I mean, yeah, they are just really perfunctory rewards.
Getting those rings and stuff is actually kind of a nuisance.
Some of them are quite tricky. Some of them are. There's one in particular with the hang glider where, because the hang glider, you know, you can't accelerate or anything. You have to fly down into Woohoo Island, like this cave underneath in the water.
Yes, I tried to get that one and then slammed into a wall.
Yeah, it's really hard because you need to go in pretty fast, because otherwise, by the time you come to the balloon that I'm trying to get, for instance, or the ring that's in there, I'm going to run out speed and just sink into the water. So you've got to go in fast. But if you go in fast, it is a hell of a time to navigate through this Death Star trench-style situation.
No, Death Star Trench was way easier.
So, yeah, actually, those things, as I said, again, I've got more out of free flight than I expected. So I think I might be still messing around with it a week from now or 2 weeks, or, yeah, but it'd be very much more occasional because I will have done everything.
Speaking of the Death Star, how awesome would a Rogue Squadron game be?
Well, they could just port one of the GameCube ones.
I prefer they didn't port anything to 3DS, but if they're going to port it, they should maybe do like a best of, you know, among the first 3 games in the series. And
well, they wouldn't do the first 3 because one's an N64 game.
Yeah, but you could still do it. You could still bring just the mission templates, but bring them up to spec.
Exactly.
I mean, game 2 or game 3 contained all of game 2.
You could always, yeah, that's yes. true. Yeah.
only in co-op, only in split screen.
Still, I mean, it contained it in an awesome way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I would much rather play them in co-op than play them single player.
Well, they've the Factor 5 have been said to be working on 3DS stuff, right?
They're working on Lair 3D.
Nice.
But they skipped Lair 2.
It's going to come with a book. You're playing it wrong, Lair 3D.
I can only assume Star Wars, you know, Rogue Squadron would benefit a lot from 3D. Just, you know, especially those original trilogy, very angular, chunky designs.
Right.
Would look very nice.
Well, like you could do a trench run, you could do all your walker stuff. I mean, there's...
Well, imagine if Return of the Jedi Death Star sequence really comes to mind.
Oh, yeah,
3D.
There's shit flying everywhere. But, like, you could do that Sega game, the arcade game, the big one with the big cabinet.
Oh, yeah, with the lightsaber fights and all the crazy stuff.
Yeah, and the trench run. I mean, that'd be perfect.
I don't care for that game.
I've never played it.
I think
it's overrated.
I was so personally. Good at that game, I could beat it on one life.
Nice.
Well, Greg, what else did you want to talk about this week?
Well, first of all, breaking news today, and I should issue the caveat that technically we are a couple of hours into April Fool's Day as I speak from Britain, so you can take some of what I say with a pinch of salt, but this is legitimate, that Xenoblade is coming to Europe.
What the hell?
That would be an assholish thing to do an April Fool's joke on.
Nintendo's not funny enough to do that.
No, well, when the news broke, it was an April Fool's Day, so
yeah, okay.
Not only would it be very evil. Considerate, but it was just being accurate. But yeah, so it's coming under the name Xenoblade Chronicles, which you can only assume is meant to infer more to the prospective buyer that it's an RPG rather than like a fighting game or something.
Yeah, they did that for White Knight when they brought that to the West, made it White Knight Chronicles.
So, interestingly, there is both the Japanese voice track and an English voice track on the same disc. And then obviously they've got subtitles for all the different European languages.
Take that, Greeks.
Well, yeah, it's just five European languages.
Greek not included.
So, yeah, it's quite surprising in a way, because in some ways this had seemed like it wasn't necessarily the more likely of the two RPGs.
In some ways? I mean, all of them.
We should say that, of course, Monolith Soft has had its work brought to Europe before, aren't we?
That's true. Can we please not bring up Disaster when talking about Xenoblade? No. I don't want those to be associated with each other.
Yeah, somebody in Europe really likes Monolith Soft.
Although that already had an English voice track.
Yeah, it did.
Now, Greg, are you interested in picking this up?
Well, you have to be somewhat interested because, first of all, it got, you know, very strong reception when it came out in June, I think it was, of last year in Japan.
Poor sales, though, wasn't
seemed
it?
It seemed to review well. Yeah, I don't think it sold that well. I'm not familiar with the numbers.
I don't think it was an unmitigated disaster. But
no,
it,
not in the same way.
Not like Disaster.
The aptly named Disaster.
It probably didn't sell, you know, commensurately with the game's budget.
Maybe that's part of the reason that they're...
Yeah, they're trying to get more out of it.
Now, just to be clear, there has been, at the time that of recording at least, there has been no announcement for North America.
Well, hold on, because there is a little bit of news on that front. A very tiny little bit of news. A bunch of websites related to the name Xenoblade have been registered by NOA.
Which is interesting because every time that it, you know, when we talked about it stubbornly still showing up on the US release schedule in the financials, it retained the Monado name, even when it had already come out as Xenoblade.
Yes.
There's no way they're going to call it Monado.
I like the name Monado. It's like, what is this?
Sounds like a super group from Italy or something, like a boy band.
Thank you, John.
But the other thing about it is that as it stands, I mean, I assume we must be quite close to, you know, some release dates getting announced for Q2. That's normally how Nintendo of Europe does things. We get to the first month of the quarter and they spill the beans. But as it stands, it doesn't seem to be like there's a great deal of stuff to look forward to on Wii. So you kind of have to be interested in a game of this kind of caliber, this pedigree. I mean, this is the one, I believe, that incentivize, don't you get experience just from exploring stuff or something like that?
I like that idea.
So it is intriguing.
Well, I watched a trailer today. It's been a while since I looked at anything about Xenoblade, but I just watched a trailer, I think it was over at Game Life, and holy crap, that game looks good.
It's beautiful.
It looks amazing, and more than, say, Monster Hunter, it has these very clearly very large, expansive environments for you to run around and explore, you know? So that's the kind of thing that gets me really pumped up when I see a trailer like, and it was gameplay footage. So I really don't know that much about how the game plays, but just seeing those kinds of environments and looking that good and thinking, wow, I mean, forget even the fact that it's a Wii RPG, which is rare enough on its own. There aren't many games being made that look like that, with that kind of big environment to explore on any platform right now. So I'm very excited about this. And
I don't know too much about it, but what you hear certainly from the stuff out of Japan is that it's very much in a similar vein to FF12.
Yes.
Now, you like that game, don't you, Johnny?
I do.
The first things I heard from the game really do center around presentational stuff. Like, I've heard that it, music-wise, is astounding.
Yes, right. I've heard very good things about that,
like,
too.
Shocking.
Well, is it the same composer from, like, the Baten Kaitos games?
No, he works for Namco Bandai.
Oh, okay. So, someone different.
Monolith does make really pretty games. I mean, that's kind of their, except for Disaster, that's kind of their thing.
Yeah, but, like, in the case of Xenosaga, for instance, I think those games were not really renowned for large environments. They're almost not RPGs in the traditional sense. They're more like sort of interactive novels or something with limited gameplay, very, very long cutscenes.
Monolith made that caveat necessary, not me.
Well, anyway, it's exciting news. You know, if in the worst case scenario, if this comes out in Europe and not America, I would certainly consider figuring out a way to import it and play it over here.
Yeah,
because
it might be Wii Mod worthy.
Yeah, I mean, especially with English voice acting and English text, like, it's easy to play. I just have to set up some stuff to get it to work. But I would definitely be looking into that if it came down to that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. This poses one of the trickier things. We've seen it before in a number of games that would need extensive localization. I mean, you know, whatever you think of the Trace Memory sequel, Another Code R. Obviously, it doesn't involve, I think, a great deal of voice acting, but it's a hell of a lot of text in that game. Mm-hmm. And they still did it for Europe and yet couldn't be bothered to bring it over to America. So there's certainly a chance that this localization will be exclusive to Europe. But on the other hand, certain aspects of the game make me think it's more likely to come over than some of those other ones that have been, you know, left out.
Right. I mean, it has a certain aura about it. Like, it's built up this kind of reputation as something that you'll never get to play this.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, it's just, it's been out there so long, and
I mean, they almost missed the boat on that, though, because it sort of lost that kind of appeal to the game that came after it, The Last Story.
Yeah.
The Last Story's sort of taken the narrative on, you'll never play this game.
Yep. That's the whole thing. I mean, everybody expects to get screwed over now.
Yeah. I've always thought Xenoblade looked more interesting than The Last Story. It's a little more fantasy looking to me. It's a little more, it looks more like Final Fantasy, oddly enough. Art wise, it looks kind of like the Crystal Bearers, maybe not quite as anime, not quite as over the top cartoony.
It reminds me a lot of the work they did when they worked for Namco Bandai. I mean, it just does. I mean, I just think, oh, there's Baten Kaitos in that art right there. I mean, you can look at games they made and go, yep, that's them.
Well, a lot of our listeners right now are thinking, hey, if this is very much at all like Baten Kaitos, they're probably down.
Well, it is Monolith Soft shockingly doing what they do rather than what they were doing before.
You mean making masterpieces?
It feels like an awful long time ago when we heard about Nintendo acquiring Monolith Soft. Mm-hmm. But this is finally the fruit of that acquisition really paying off.
It was before the Wii came out.
Yeah, and Yuji Horii was recently quoted as saying that Dragon Quest X is still coming to the Wii. I guess he didn't use the word exclusive. Maybe he felt like he didn't have to, but some people are thinking, some people are hoping, I think they're going to be disappointed that it could be ported later to PS3 or 3DS or whatever. But apparently Dragon Quest X is still coming to Wii, and they expect to reveal it before the end of this year. So, which could mean tomorrow. But, yeah. You know, we shall see. I still think that game will be kind of like a December release in Japan.
And apparently he said, you know, oh, well, fans have been asking for something, you know, more like DQ8 than 9,
yes,
kind of afterwards. So, you
yes
know, that's a pretty strong suggestion. Unsurprisingly, really, because it is, of course, you know, going back to a console, that
yeah
it's going to be a return to that style.
Well, and he wouldn't say fans have been looking for something more like DQ8 than 9 and be like, but F them.
Oh, yeah, but they're going to be so disappointed.
Yeah, well, Dragon Quest VIII is so far unique in that series because it's really a third-person sort of adventure game, you know, because you're kind of looking over the character's shoulder, you have full camera movement, and because of that, the worlds are sort of designed to have this big, open, expansive feel to them and you know, a lot of exploration in a way that's very different from when you're looking from the top down. As, you know, in DQ9, they basically went back to the top-down view that they used for the first 7 games. And so I always expected that this would look more like Dragon Quest VIII. So I'm thrilled.
I can hear it in your voice, Johnny.
Greg, yeah, it's a good week for RPG news, or maybe teases more than news. But Greg, did you have anything else?
The last thing is a second month in a row with good Japanese virtual console news. I am very happy to report that after Final Fantasy VI came out last month...
Are you playing that?
No, I'm not playing it yet. I said I've got FF6, Mass Effect 2. There's a lot of things I could be doing on the console I'm just not finding time for right now.
Yeah.
But they're following that up in Japan, which on the basis of, you know, how quickly, there was just days between Europe and Japan in the case of FF6, it could mean a quick turnaround for Western release in this case. Chrono Trigger is coming in its virtual console form to Japan. So that if that were to come to Europe, it would be the first time the Super Nintendo version has ever sort of seen the light of day.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that never came. If the DS one was the first version that came out in Europe. The both the PlayStation, you know, the dodgy port with the load times, and the original cartridge did not come out. But virtual console, it'll be perfect. I mean, there is a tiny little sort of inaccuracy with the music at times that I kind of noticed, so I just hate myself if I bought it, I think.
I was thinking to myself about that same thing, like, you know, if and when Chrono Trigger comes to Virtual Console in America, which seems inevitable at this point,
yeah,
will I spend it's only $8, and
true.
Well, I could.
I look forward to buying it so I can not play through it again.
You ass.
I'm gonna gift it to you,
John. I'll buy it, but I'll send it to John. How about that?
I've already got gifts in mind for John.
Enjoy your massage 2 through 6.
I was thinking fireplaces, actually.
Yeah, I'll just gift it to you, John. That
it's
way,
cold
I
in Boston.
That way, I vote with my money or whatever people say. and yet, I don't own a redundant copy. The thing is, though, if I download, I will play it on Virtual Console.
You know, I can't talk about redundant copies of anything, considering how many times I own the same fucking Mega Man games.
Well, I guess you get it. If you're really kind of pedantic and nostalgic for the Woolsey translation, so, like, they're the Mystics instead of the Fiends or whatever.
Oh, that's a good reason to own both, actually.
Yeah, it's huge.
So, speaking of Mega Man...
No, but this is what I'm really excited about, because Mega Man X is coming.
Oh!
I'm going to be able to play it. You've got to remember, obviously, Mega Man X, as James is keen to point out, has been re-released in many venues.
740 ways.
But I've never played it, because I was not converted to Mega Man until the Wii, until the Virtual Console and Wii were. You know, so I started with 2, 3, 9, and 10. I love those, and I've played ZX Advent a lot, so I'm completely pumped for X. I'm going to absolutely love this.
You're in for a treat that you cannot imagine.
Oh,
yeah,
I can't
really
wait. I have been begging for this for so long. I mean, it's really right at the top of the list of things that I've wanted to come out on Virtual Console, and it is coming out. So Mass Effect 2 for FF6 could sod off as soon as this drops.
Yeah, I just hope that they follow this up with X2 and X3, which are even better, in my opinion. And they're very hard to get. On like, a Super Nintendo copy of X2 and X3, very, very expensive. I mean, I have them on the Mega Man X collection on GameCube, which I could pop in.
Which actually has good controls versus the Mega Man collection, which has shit controls.
It's fine. The emulation has a couple of minor problems, and I think the music is not emulated all that well on the collection, but I would totally buy all three of these for Virtual Console, and even the first one is utterly fantastic. Greg, I have to warn you, there's a bit of grinding in Mega Man X, which I know sounds weird, but because of the way that the energy tanks are done, they're called sub-tanks.
Oh, yeah.
You fill them up, and then they're reusable, so you can use it and then just go get more energy pellets and fill it back up again. It gives it this weird kind of RPG feel to it, and you will be on the lookout for places where you can, like, regenerate enemies.
Yeah, basically enemy factories where you can just sit there and kill the same enemy over
and
over.
And they're not hard to find places like that.
No, in fact, there are places early in levels that seem designed just for that purpose.
Anywhere you see the bats.
There is a similar mechanic in ZX Advent in terms of you have those sub-tanks that you can refill. So if you've got full health, then any additional health you collect goes to the sub-tanks.
Right.
But just the way that game was, you didn't really seem to like you needed to, but I guess...
You will fucking need this.
Yeah, this is going to be the real deal.
These are of critical import.
Capcom have kind of come back to the Virtual Console a little bit. They had the arcade stuff sort of end of last year, beginning of this one. You know, they're getting in with Mega Man X. I'm hoping for more Mega Man X. I'm definitely hoping for Demon's Crest.
Mm. Oh, talk dirty to me, baby.
But also...
All right, John, you heard the man.
Let me warm my throat up.
Hey, now.
I'll warm your throat up.
There it is.
I couldn't leave that on the table. Yeah. Sorry.
Threw it out there, right down the
middle,
buddy.
Going back to Chrono Trigger and FF6, though, who would have thought, all the, you know, when the Virtual Console was starting out, you know, when they sort of came out with stuff like ActRaiser, but FF games like was nowhere to be found, that we'd be here and we've got Chrono Trigger and FF6, which hasn't even been remade yet, and yet all those other Enix games from the era, like even ActRaiser 2,
no,
or, you know, Illusion of Gaia or Soul Blazer, all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
they're not here.
Well, ActRaiser 2's not here because it's crap. That's why it's not here.
It wouldn't be the worst game on Virtual Console, James.
Hey.
It would be the worst sequel.
I like ActRaiser 2.
Well,
I just,
you're wrong.
It's so hard. It's perfect for... Actually, Greg, I bet you'd love it, because it's...
I'm intrigued.
It's a bastardization.
Although I've kind of heard that it's not necessarily hard in a good way.
Well, neither is Super Ghouls and Ghosts, in my opinion, but I think ActRaiser 2 is more fun than that, and it's... gorgeous. The presentation of it is unbelievable. The controls are great.
Yeah, you know, it's a classic thing again, you know, like what I heard about it, you know, back in the day didn't sound worthy of paying all that money for a Super Famicom game.
No,
or whatever.
Probably not.
$8 now, I'm willing to try. If I get burned, so be it.
I like ActRaiser 2 with the very foolhardy assumption that there will one day be ActRaiser 3 that's all the Angel Simulation stuff. Just to balance the force, you know.
It's like, hey, let's take all the stuff that made this unique out.
I might have to go play ActRaiser after this. Man, that is a lot of very, very excellent Virtual Console news.
Well, for him.
We're still waiting for FF6 over here, but...
We're still waiting for a lot of things over here.
I don't think it'll be that long. If it's out in Europe, it'll be out here very soon.
Yeah, I mean, you look at FF4, it followed a similar template, although this seems a bit more compressed, actually.
Yeah. I was surprised that it didn't come out this week because there were no new WiiWare games. There was just a couple of demos.
It was a very weird this week in Nintendo downloads.
Yeah. John, did you have anything that you wanted to bring up this week?
Nothing really Nintendo related. I did manage to play some Killzone 3 with the sharpshooter big gun thing.
The big plastic gun inspired by the SNES bazooka.
Yeah, pretty much. It makes the game, you know, it's funny because I've read some reviews of it, like on Amazon and stuff, and people are like, oh, well, you have to tweak it, and it's perfect. It's awesome. But man, I'm willing to, like, you know, kind of accept that maybe that's possible. But man, when you play with that thing, especially after, like getting used to playing with Move, whew, that thing is impossible. Because just picture that, you know, how, like, you know, the typical, like Wiimote controls for an FPS, you know, you kind of have to nudge the screen.
Yeah.
Picture doing that with, like, your entire, like, both arms holding that out in front of you and nudging the entire screen with both arms.
Yeah. So it's like you're thrusting your gun at things?
It's the same as if you tried to play the Conduit with the Zapper.
Yeah.
Which you could do.
But that's the thing, I never understood that. Like, I get the whole Zapper thing in the context of even of something like Sin and Punishment 2, which I would never use it for, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, it's Sin and Punishment 2 is still a static screen, so it makes sense.
Yep.
See, I used it for Trauma Team, but I didn't use it for Sin and Punishment.
You used it for Trauma Team?
Fuck no.
Of course.
Well, I don't even own a Zapper.
So, I know it's easy to dismiss the sharpshooter as the PlayStation Zapper, but...
It's got buttons.
I got to look at it when I was at John's place in Boston, and I was pretty impressed at the build quality of it. And also, it is it's more like that Nyko gun thing that they did with their wand controller for the Wii,
right,
where it's not a mechanically driven system, it has electronics. So the controller plugs into it, and then it has an electronic trigger
button
and other buttons. So it's not so much about arranging the controllers in such a way that you can still reach all of the buttons on them. It has its own buttons that are much easier to reach.
Yeah. In terms of being a gun controller, like an actual gun controller, I can't see anything improving on it.
Is it heavy?
It's not really too heavy, but the thing is, I mean, if you're playing something like Killzone, right? I mean, you have to sit there, and the thing is, it's heavy enough, you
right
know?
The Super Scope wasn't heavy until you used it for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God!
Yeah, then you're like,
I'm tired of shooting Yoshis.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe
so
it would be better
be
if I was able to, like, stand up with it, and maybe, like, if I had, like, a bigger screen or something. Because right now I'm sitting down, and I'm seriously, like, maybe 3 feet away from the screen because I'm just playing, like, in my computer room.
Does it help, though? I mean, gameplay-wise. Do you feel like you gain anything?
I didn't feel like I had any sort of edge with it. Not like Move compared to, like, the DualShock controllers. I mean, with Move, you actually feel like you're actually more accurate. But still, like, the weird problem that I ran into was, you know, there's sometimes when somebody sneaks up behind you and you kind of just see out of the corner of your eye that they're there, and so you have to wheel around really quickly. Well, doing that with this thing, it's like, you know, I mean, the problem is the gun is the camera. So if you move a little bit too much, the camera just goes off.
The ironic thing being that you need a camera to make the gun work.
Oh, right. So if you're not pointed at it, you're screwed.
It's weird having to aim by moving the gun, and by moving the gun, also moving the camera. It's pretty screwed.
See, I feel that way about even playing like GoldenEye with just the Wii remote.
Yeah.
But but it's easier when you don't have this big piece of plastic, because you're just kind of pivoting your wrist, for instance, whereas you add more and more bulk to this arrangement and it becomes more and more ludicrous to move all this stuff just to turn. Whereas, you know, if you're playing it with a controller, you just flick the joystick over there.
Yeah.
Right.
It's too much motion control. It's too much motion to play your game.
Yep.
Well, it also just doesn't seem all that compatible with the kind of game that Killzone is, you know.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a shooting gallery, is it?
It's not Hogan's Alley, no.
It certainly isn't. You're not joining the FBI.
Hey, John, I saw that there's now a demo for Echo Chrome 2.
Ooh.
Which I can't try because I don't have a Move.
Yeah.
But if I had a Move, that would be the first thing that I got.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give that a shot.
Should look into that. It's a free demo, so. Anyway, I'll wrap up new business with just a few words on Beyond Good and Evil HD. This isn't out on PS3 yet. I'm playing it on Xbox. I think it's going to be out. Greg, you said May, but I think it's actually in
April. I heard May, but it wasn't very definite, so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Microsoft has some kind of, you know, temporary exclusive on it because it came out during one of their packages, you know, one of their Spring of Arcade or whatever they call it, Spring Feast or
right.
Festival.
Game Feast.
Festivus.
It's probably a month exclusivity, so I would think it might be out sometime in April on PSN. But
unless there's a regional dimension to it.
That could be. I do certainly recommend it when it comes out. I'm you know, I played through this back when it was out on GameCube, so it's been about 7 or 8 years, I guess, since I played
roughly,
it.
Roughly, yeah.
I loved it back then, but it had been so long. I only had this sort of vague kind of blobby notion of what the game was about and what it was like to play. I remembered it being Zelda-like with kind of sci-fi elements, and I remember the photography part of it being really good.
Yeah, I remember it's Zelda with cameras.
The photography holds up really nicely. It still has this like really cool Pokemon Snap feel to it, because you're tasked, the first thing that you do in the game is you're tasked with taking pictures of all the animals on this planet. And so anytime you see an animal in a new place, you get really excited because you take a picture of it, it gives you credit. Taking a lot of photos actually is valuable. It gives you pearls, which are very important in the game. So it really feels like it's worth your time to do it. And the animals come out in different nooks and crannies in the environment. Sometimes you have to do certain things to make them come out, which is very Pokemon Snap. So that aspect of the game is wonderful, and it's really something that not very many video games do well. So I've really enjoyed the photography aspect is actually very important in the story. It, you know, because your main character Jade is a photojournalist essentially, you really get the feeling that the camera is almost her weapon, because there's not that much combat in the game.
And most of it's sneaking up behind the enemies, really.
Yeah, unfortunately, the gameplay is leveraged too much on stealth, because there's more stealth than combat actually in the game. And the stealth works okay, except that you don't have all this like Metal Gear type radar stuff showing you what's going on. So a lot of times you're messing with the camera just to try to figure out where the enemies are looking. And sometimes it's hard to see where they're all looking at the same time. Sometimes you get caught and you're not really sure why. And that's never a good feeling. And it's the kind of thing where if this was a full-on remake, they probably could have gone back in and changed some of that stuff a little bit and rebalanced it maybe. Or just given you a little bit better tools so you could tell, you know, just a little more situational awareness. But this is really a graphical overhaul.
Right.
And that's it. They haven't really changed anything else about it. And graphically, it looks great. I have to say, I mean, for an 8-year-old game, it looks amazing. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that it had such great art design in the first place, that the fact that, you know, some of the character models don't have a whole lot of polygons or animations or anything, it matters less because they look distinctive, you know? They look basically like you remember them, and the world is so colorful and vibrant and interesting that I haven't really seen anything where I've thought, that just looks bad or that just looks really old. The only thing that's really stuck out to me is that Jade doesn't really have any facial animation to speak of. She can lower her eyelids like half-mast or all the way, and her mouth opens and closes, and that's about it. It ends up being she ends up looking kind of like a marionette, because they get into these cutscenes that are really are very emotional, and the music is very sweeping and sad in some cases, or epic sounding, and she just always has the same kind of dumb look on her face, and it's it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't have noticed back in 2003.
Everybody had dumb looks on their face.
Yeah. Well, it's just not, it just wasn't something that you'd expect. But now that the graphics have all been up-resed and the textures look better and some of the character models are a little bit more detailed now, I think, and that we live in the age of Uncharted, etc., Jade is meant to be a human character, and she's supposed to be showing human emotion, and there are a lot of times when the voice acting and the face animation just doesn't match up at all. And it's a little distracting, but it's not a big deal. The funny thing is, this game usually is referred to as being sort of a sci-fi Zelda, and I think it only applies structurally, because structurally, the game is sort of about having this overworld, it has a couple of towns that you go to, it's basically broken up in a series of three or four major dungeons that you go into, some of them have items that you get that give you new abilities, there's a lot of puzzle solving, in all of those ways, it's very Zelda-like, but the actual gameplay really doesn't feel very much like Zelda, because the combat is very sparse and extremely simple. It's much less leveraged on getting dungeon items, that kind of thing, special sub-items, sub-weapons, and stuff like that. The puzzles are similar in some cases, but that's kind of the extent of it. And it's much more leveraged on storytelling, actually. The story is just very, very strong and beyond good and evil. The world that's created is sort of immediately believable. It's very quirky. It's very memorable. The characters are pretty interesting, and it sort of deals with issues like, starting a rebellion and fighting the man and using the power of journalism and media to start an uprising against the oppressive regime. It's just stuff that you don't really actually get very often in video games for whatever reason. And it's certainly much more in-depth than in anything you get in any of the Zelda games.
Well, I think a lot of people would have a hard time trying to convert that into a game that's actually fun to play, right? Because a lot of things, it's very easy to convert something like war, where it's a very charged topic, and you can make a set piece around it. You can't really make a set piece out of, printing an underground newspaper.
Well, and yet you sort of can. They do it. They pull it off in Beyond Good and Evil.
Well,
because,
yeah, it requires effort.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, you have to create this artificial fantasy world in which all these events are taking place. And, the way the game progresses is basically Jade has to go into these different areas where the government is doing bad things, and she has to get in there and take stealth photos with evidence of what's going on so that they can publish it in the paper and get the populace on their side. It's a really great concept for a game that I don't know that I've ever seen before, and so I think the reason that Beyond Good and Evil works as an HD re-release is that there really hasn't been anything like it in the past 8 years. There really hasn't been any follow-up. And the gameplay itself doesn't always hold up, and just mainly in terms of the stealth. I don't think it held up that well in the first place. It's just maybe seems a little bit less forgivable now, now that so many other games have sort of mastered that. But the storytelling, the way the world's put together, the excitement of playing through the game and progressing in the quest is totally still there. And I think it's a wonderful game. The fact that it's now $10 to play this very quintessential version of it is awesome. So I would highly recommend it. And, if you've never played it before and you're a fan of Zelda, you really do have to play it, because, as I said, in some ways it's not like Zelda, in some ways it really is. And it just takes some of those Zelda elements and puts them in a completely different context. And the game overall just holds up beautifully. So it's definitely worth your time checking out. All right, now we're going to take a break. And after now playing, we'll be back with your listener mail. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Aaron has written Bonk Beyond the Brink of Extinction, where he gives both the facts and his personal thoughts on the dissolution of Hudson Entertainment, the creators of the classic franchises Bomberman, Bonk, Adventure Island, Mario Party, and Mylon's Secret Castle.
Especially Mylon's Secret Castle.
Which is not classic. It's just evil.
I'll never get my sequel now.
Our newest staff member, Patrick, writes his review of Samurai Warrior Chronicles, this 3DS launch title, and is very impressed by its use of 3D, but does the gameplay hold up?
Next up, we have a review of The Sims 3 for 3DS. The best way to describe Andy's review of this 3DS version is to simply quote the article's tagline. 3D Sim needs food badly, 3D Sim is about to die. And next, we have a blog, How to Make a Real Working Coin Block. This from Andrew Brown directs you to instructions for building your own super geeky coin bank from Super Mario Bros.
And on the review front, we have WWE All-Stars, which Andy Gergen reviews. This Wii Wrestling title, he gives it high marks for its arcade-style gameplay and strong presentation. And continuing Neil's series of 3DS launch reviews, he's been reviewing Machine, Super Monkey Ball 3D. He tells us whether or not Sega's Monkey Ball franchise has turned around from its decade-long decline in quality.
Speaking of declines in quality, Ridge Racer 3D.
That's impossible.
Isn't this meant to be good?
Yes. Actually, this one is a turnaround, and you can help validate Neil's dedication to the website and also learn about one of the best 3DS launch titles by reading his review for Namco's perennial launch title. We've also got brand new, very in-depth impressions of Professor Layton and the Mask of Miracle. This is the 3DS game that's only available in Japan for probably a good long while. So while you're waiting for the next Famicast, be sure to check out Danny's in-depth coverage of Professor Layton. Finally, we have Extra Life Yoshi's Island DS. Neil takes a break from the 3DS to revisit this somewhat controversial sequel to the classic Yoshi's Island. All this plus the latest news on upcoming 3DS games, the new Spider-Man title, Xenoblade in English, and much more over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Back to the show. It's time for listener mail. This is our quasi 3DS edition of the mailbag. The address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And James has the first question.
Jim writes, serious question, do you guys still have faith in Nintendo? It seems the rest of the gaming press has given up on Nintendo and immediately jump on any negatives of new hardware / software / random comments and look to rid themselves of the company like they have wronged them somehow. This does not mean that criticisms and discussion of negatives is not welcome. It certainly is. And I definitely come off as a fanboy with my reaction to their reaction, but positivity seems to be on the endangered species list. I know pointing out the negatives and flaws is much easier to articulate than the positives, but it seems, especially with your Wii 2 segment from PAX, that you guys have been quick to jump onto negatives or fear the worst immediately. You all work for this website for a reason and do quite a tremendous job. Don't misread me there. I love the site. But is Nintendo's influence on you more tenuous now? Can the company still do to you what it did to get you here in the first place? And if it can't, do you see that it is more of you changing or the company? Sorry for the rambling and seemingly overwhelming negativity in an email about overwhelming negativity, but I am looking for some positivity in my life. Currently going through cancer treatment, so I probably spend too much time on the internet. And that includes my hobbies. I value you guys' opinion more than any other outlets, so I look forward to hearing from you.
Well, first off, I hope you get better.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Good luck, man.
Well, if I could have a stab at this.
Is that the right word you want to use here? Because we're talking about negativity.
If I could give this the old college try.
There we go.
Is that positive enough for you?
Much better.
Well, first of all, I would, if I may, I would like to disentangle this from the word faith, because I don't think I've ever had faith in Nintendo from the point of view that faith to me is belief without reason.
Uh-oh, we're getting theological here.
It's just a belief is not conditional on any kinds of facts or observations or reason.
Right, that's the definition of faith.
You just hold it. Right, and I mean, no one should have that about a company, you know, I mean...
Right, and people do. I mean, some of us grew up with faith in companies like Nintendo, and some of us had to grow out of that, you know, as
I don't think it's faith of when it's based on a track record of, you know, that they've given you products that you've enjoyed, or, I mean, that's something, that's real, that's happened.
Faith was like Xbox fanboy websites coming up within a week of... the GDC where Xbox was originally.
Well, to be fair, it was a big metal X with a green glowing thing in the middle. So F you, I had faith in that like it was my new shrine. Because it kind of looked like one.
To me, I have confidence in Nintendo now, and I've had confidence in them for a long while because they just keep delivering gaming experiences that I enjoy.
I feel like we all know Nintendo better as a company now than we did when we were kids, to say the least, because you really don't.
Well, you've got so much more perspective.
Exactly. I mean, so I wouldn't say that, I don't think any of us are really down on Nintendo at all, but there's just certain things that we know that Nintendo doesn't do well. So when you watch that, when you watch the same things happen over a decade or 15 years, and they don't really seem to change, like Greg said, it's a track record, and you don't expect that to change, or at least change overnight. You hope for the best, but, you know.
And if I may, if I can have a guess, you know, as to the PAX panel thing, obviously it's not something that I've had the opportunity to participate in myself, unfortunately, but I might venture that it's probably terribly nerve-wracking being up there, and so, you know, you just retreat into this Twilight Princess is exactly the same as Ocarina of Time kind of snark, superior, cynical kind of persona as a defense mechanism to show that it's not bothering you.
Cynicism moves the stage.
Greg, I think you're onto something there.
But you know, I'm trying to remember what I said about Wii 2 besides we have no freaking clue what they're doing. And I think there's a certain amount of fear because we really don't know what they're doing. I mean, they pull this sometimes where they're like, something's happening! And you're like, oh god.
Well, they've been very keen to downplay, you know, how imminent another console is compared to, you know, what the analyst predictions are, you know, I mean, they're not trying to string us along, that's for sure.
I think if I had to go back and do the panel again, which maybe I will next year, but...
we might be answering the same questions.
I think the topics that I would have brought up, you know, the ideas, the hopes, the fears, etc., for Wii 2 that I brought up would be the same. I might address them from just with different verbiage, and maybe that the way that I went about it is due to what Greg said about just being nervous or whatever, about being in an unfamiliar environment talking about these topics.
In front of people.
And being with, you know, somewhat different cast of people as well. But, you know, maybe in terms of what we brought up, maybe instead of saying things in a negative way like, well, I'm afraid we'll still be using friend codes or something like that. You know, the fact is, I'm encouraged by, for instance, the movement that we see on 3DS towards a smoother online experience.
A unified friend code.
Yes, better connectivity, you know, more consistent usage from game to game. I'm very positive about that. I think it's a big step in the right direction. There are some caveats, which we don't need to get into because everybody knows them. For the Wii, I expect that it will do at least as much as 3DS has done in those terms. What I'm concerned about is that it may not go farther, it may not take the next step, which is what I would like to see.
I think that isn't cynicism, that's a well-grounded...
Again, yeah, you could base that in reality, yeah.
It's exactly what happened with the DS. I mean, the Wii's architecture for online play is startlingly similar to the one the DS pioneered 2 to 3 years earlier.
You know, I think my outlook on the Wii software library, for instance, which is, you know, one of the things we talked about, one of the reasons that, you know, some of us think the Wii 2 may be closer than you might think, is that if you look at the Wii software lineup, it's very thin right now. If the week before PAX, you know, in other words, if you had moved up certain things about what we know now, if you'd moved that up a month earlier, and we knew that Xenoblade is likely coming out in the West, at least in Europe, if not North America. If we knew that the Virtual Console isn't completely dead, which seems to be that there is some kind of weird late renaissance of Virtual Console, mm-hmm. you know, I might have felt a little more positive about it. But based on the information that we had at that time, it was like, wow, I can't think of a single Wii game that I know of coming out this year other than Zelda that I'm truly excited about.
Yeah, which leads one to think that they have a team working on that game and everybody else is working on stuff for the new console. At least in the planning stages, you know? I mean,
I can't remember. Was that Investors Conference before or after PAX?
It's probably before.
So we had a Kirby game and Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah, that was before.
Yeah, that was it. That was what they had for us. And we're like, ew.
Well, I'm looking forward to Rhythm Heaven. I'm an absolute sucker for those games. And isn't it awesome that they have a visualizer for 3DS that's from the original Rhythm Tengoku and not the one that was actually released everywhere? I think that's great.
Yes.
Is that in the DS sound?
Yeah, the DS sound.
Yes. Yeah, so
it's right there along with Excitebike where it belongs.
Let me just say, if I'm not super high on the Wii's, on the first party Wii stuff right now, it's because the last year has been a little disappointing for me, the things that actually came out. And for some people, last year was amazing, okay? If you fucking love Donkey Kong Country Returns and Sin and Punishment 2, like Greg, then last year was really good.
Well, and
it's more matter of Galaxy 2 as well.
Yeah. See, I like Galaxy 2 a lot, but there's no surprises in that game whatsoever. There's no sense of wonder for me because it is just a level pack for Mario Galaxy. It's just more of the same thing. And we've talked about this a lot.
There's still moments with that game. I mean, it's all, if you could imagine, like, tiers of discovery or something. Like, there's no, like, first-order discovery, but in the context of Mario Galaxy, there's still some great moments, like, where you're running around on a platform and then you hit a switch and then, like, half of that world just falls away into a black hole and now you're platforming on top of everything instead of, you know, on the side of everything. And it still does stuff to surprise you and, you know, in a way that, you know, a lot of games don't, even if they're not sequels or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, in a general sense, Mario Galaxy 2 was kind of a known quantity and it didn't give me that sense of wonder and awe that the first one did because it's extremely similar to the first one. Not to say it's not a great game, but then Metroid Other M is a disappointment to a large extent, even though it's still a good game.
I enjoyed it. I would say it was something of a disappointment, but not a major one necessarily, but I enjoyed it, bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, for the first original Japanese Metroid game since Fusion, basically.
It's a weight of expectation that's tough to shoulder. I know.
Look, right. There is no series I apply a higher standard to than Metroid.
Really?
Yes, really. And Other M didn't live up to that. So it was a disappointment for me, you know, and that's a game I was really excited about. And then, you know, Kirby is a perfectly sweet little game, but it's not enough for me. And then Donkey Kong I had serious problems with, as we talked about. So for me, I'm coming off of a year where I really wasn't very satisfied with Nintendo. Not to say they didn't put out some, and by the, you know, Sin and Punishment was like a rental for me at best. So they put out a lot of games. None of them really hit a home run for me. And my entire lifetime, Nintendo's put out at least one or two games a year that's pretty much a complete home run for me. So I'm coming off of a year where, personally, the Wii really, you know, I kind of lost interest in it. I was engaged with some third-party stuff like Trauma Team and GoldenEye, but for the most part, it wasn't a great year for me on the Wii. This year, from what we know, is looking potentially troublesome, you know.
It's just much more sparse.
It's more sparse, yeah. And Zelda's still a little scary, although I'm pretty confident that's going to come out to be really great, but they still haven't shown us a lot that level of confidence.
Let's move away from what we're not happy about and talk about what
I'm just saying.
Are
I'm just
happy.
Saying that's why I'm, you know, if I sound negative lately, that's why. And I need Nintendo to show me some things to get me really excited. And they're just, because of the way that they mete out these announcements, you know, right now, there's not a whole lot for me. Xenoblade, today, I read about Xenoblade today. That is the most excited I've been about a Wii game in a long time.
Well, so we discussed on email, the thing I'm most excited about is Mega Man X.
That's not saying much, is it?
That's more to do with, go to part of Jim's question, that is more to do with me and not the company or the industry or the world, certainly. But, you know, I mean, on a more broad spectrum, I think for me, the biggest thing about Nintendo is that they still kind of deliver the kinds of experiences that I like with more frequency than anyone else. I mean, just because the gameplay sensibilities that they have, yes, they've gone into different directions with Nintendogs and Wii Sports and all that, and I've had fun with some of that stuff, but they also, you know, especially recently with New Super Mario Brothers and DK and all that kind of stuff, they punch out, especially the fact they brought that back. They haven't lost touch with the things that I still like about games, like a lot of companies have. Like, when my NES collection barely had any Nintendo games in it. It was mostly Konami, for instance, I think it was pretty much for the vast majority of it. And then when you moved on to the Super Nintendo, it was Konami and Capcom and, you know, some Nintendo games and all that. But a lot of those companies really have, you know, maybe apart from like some downloadable retro revival stuff, they're just completely adrift from those games that I enjoyed as a child and what I still love about games. Whereas Nintendo have, you know, they've branched out too, but they've stayed in touch, and that's why I'm more confident.
If you're primarily a Nintendo gamer, then I think it's been easy to become more emotional about what Nintendo does now because you have less of that buffer. And this goes really back to the N64 era, which is when I started writing about Nintendo. And so I think I've been consistently maybe on the pessimistic or the cynical side for my entire career.
I think skeptical is probably more accurate.
Skeptical, sure.
You know, apart from the snark at PAX, if you want to call it that, you know, it's healthy skepticism a lot of the time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I can see the merit to it. There is reason behind it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think my feelings on the DS are very different than for the Wii, for example, because the DS has had excellent third-party support. And so if I have disappointments in whatever Nintendo puts out in a given year for DS, it's not that big of a deal because there's still all this amazing other stuff that I'm interested in. For the Wii, that really hasn't borne out. There was some hope early on that, you know, there would be really awesome third-party support. For the most part, I don't think it really panned out. And so we've been more focused on what does Nintendo do for the Wii? And that's been a little more scattershot this generation for me personally than it was, for instance, in the GameCube era. So that's why. You know, with the Wii 2, if they figure out a way, whatever the magical formula is, to bring the third parties in and really, really get them on board for the long haul, not just for the launch period where there's tons of easy money to be made, then I'm less concerned about Nintendo going Blue Ocean or doing weird shit with their franchises or whatever. You know, I'm much more flexible on all that stuff, as I have been on the DS. You know, there's not a single 2D Metroid game on the DS. It's still one of my favorite systems of all time because it's got a lot of other shit that I really love on it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the Wii has kind of turned out, you know, obviously it's been a huge success for Nintendo, but, you know, from a fan standpoint, it's kind of like the GameCube where it's been a whole lot of great Nintendo content, but not too much else on the third-party side. You know, a couple of games here and there, a couple of great games.
Yeah, it's been less successful in that sense than the GameCube because the GameCube still got the Beyond Good and Evils and the Princes of Persia, etc.
Resident Evil 4.
It still got those, you know, top-tier games, even if they were multi-platform releases. The GameCube got a good version of most of those games, and unfortunately with the Wii, that largely has not been the case. So I'd say in that way it's been maybe less successful. There's still some unique things from third parties on the Wii, but not that many that are worth being really excited about.
I'm going to give some positivity because
this was all a trap to make James say something positive.
This whole question was about, hey, let's be positive, and we're all like, no.
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
And James
that's
Jones.
Wonderful is what I feel when we're together.
Actually, this whole question was a trap just to get that. I feel like that Nintendo in Western markets has done an admirable job of trying, at the very least, to provide content on some platform for people who own their systems. I mean, on the DS, they've brought over games that we weren't going to get, that were third-party titles that we should have gotten, and their original publishers were stupid to not bring them over.
They did a lot of that with Wii in Europe early.
We talked
about the trauma games, or we talked about Zack and Wiki before and stuff like that. Like they were quite proactive with that. And then at some point they pivoted to translating games of Nintendo's that NOA wasn't interested in instead.
Right. Well, and now they're actually doing that for 3DS games in Europe. There's at least one or two 3DS games they're going to be publishing instead of the original publisher.
Well, I think it's distribution is the big thing with like DOA, Street Fighter, you know, they're pitching in a bit, but they're not, I don't think they're technically publishing it. They've done it with Monster Hunter as well on Wii. They are getting quite proactive.
I think how they've handled the 3DS's launch is, honestly, I was worried they were going to do a really poor job of it. I thought we were going to have kind of the Wii redux where everybody wants one, nobody can find one. But if you really want a 3DS right now, you can go get one.
I haven't heard any serious problems with availability.
I mean, obviously, they might have liked to have seen riots in the streets for 3DSs, but but I think ultimately that's a good lesson they learned. And while the launch lineup for the 3DS isn't great, it's relatively diverse.
It's big.
It's big.
Plenty to choose from, that's for sure.
Right, but I mean, it's your standard launch lineup games, but at least it's got a diverse lineup, and they clearly went the extra mile to make sure that that second and third break of games.
Yeah, but it's intentionally spaced out. They've talked about this, that you know they want a consistent stream of games going from through the summer, and then you know obviously ultimately building up to the holiday.
But I mean, they clearly made an effort to reach out to publishers and say, hey, look at what we have. We want you to make a big title for this.
No, I mean, you could see already Capcom, for me. They have plenty of DS games. James has most of them.
Yes.
And they're good games. But
they're good games, yes. But I mean, it's more than Capcom. It's companies like Konami.
That Metal Gear thing is going to be big.
But the point is that if you look at the difference in the kind of stuff they're launching there, you know, like Resident Evil, it seems a lot more of an earnest attempt to capture that franchise's fan base on 3DS than the Deadly Silence remake on DS.
And
Street Fighter 4. You know, I mean, as you said, that works well on a portable. You know, why didn't we have Street Fighter on DS?
Year and a half of 3DS support of DS support from third parties. Now think about the first year and a half of what the 3DS is shaping up to be.
It's much less wait and see.
It's not just that. It's much more quality. I mean, it wasn't until about a year and a half into the DS's lifespan that we really started to get hit with the deluge.
But that's because Nintendo themselves cultivated essentially an atmosphere of wait and see, because even they said, well, it's the third pillar, don't fuss about it too
much. I know,
but
I'm just saying, they did a better job this time.
Do a better job, but it's also building on the success of DS.
Exactly. That's why everybody's already sold on Nintendo's concept. So therefore, they'll back it. Whereas before, they were just like, GameCube sucked, and, you know, hey, you know, everybody bailed on that.
John, not helping.
I'm not saying that everybody else was, like, EA bailed on GameCube. All those companies bailed on GameCube.
They're building now from a position of strength. I still commend them.
But, I mean, some of these companies really aren't all that active on Wii either. I mean,
no, exactly. But that's the point. I think DS was obviously a huge success. Now, the software market apparently went sour a while ago. If you know what I mean, if you hear the attitudes about piracy and you know, just getting lost in the shuffle and stuff, it seems like publishers did go a little bit sour on the DS market at the end. But I guess the promise of improved piracy protection, copy protection, and also the value of the games going up as well. You know, they're charging more for them, so I guess they're kind of excited about the revenue potential there.
Right, I mean, they went and they at least, to a certain extent, they reflected the concerns of their third-party platform.
Yeah, and they sold them that this would be not just building on the success of DS, but it's going to be even better.
Yes, and I think I've only gotten to show one person who didn't know about the 3DS at this point. And their first response is not fit for this show, because it was like 6 or 7 expletives of just like, what am I looking at?
Yeah.
I didn't tell them what it was either. I just put it in their hands in the sweet spot already.
Well, that's cool.
and it was and then the swears just started until they kind of figured out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think 3DS is I haven't spent a lot of time with them, but it seems to be a very nicely built system. I think they've learned a lot about that, and you hear a lot of people talking about how it's, you know, it feels like basically the next generation of DSi. So it doesn't feel like they've made like a clunker to start out with, which they did with DS. So they've come a long way in that respect. It's a nice system. I think the third-party support for 3DS is extremely encouraging. If we want to be positive about something here, it's easy to be positive about the third-party support for 3DS because it's miles better already than anything we saw on Wii or even DS.
Yep. Yeah.
And you know, I think Nintendo's initial lineup is a little underwhelming. Just, you know, when you compare it to how Nintendo used to launch systems with stuff like Mario 64 and even Twilight Princess on the Wii and Wii Sports, these are very strong launch titles. You don't really have an equivalent to that, but I do think that at E3 this year, we're going to see some killer stuff from Nintendo, far beyond Kid Icarus and Zelda 64. And actually, just this week, I started sort of piecing together this concept in my mind. And, you know, if I want to throw out just a wild prediction here, can you see, like, because, you know, if you think of the 3DS, you guys have already described it as almost like looking into a diorama, I think that effect would be amazing with a 2D Metroid game. Oh, yeah, I think it would just be stunning. And it's been a long time since Nintendo's made one of those. And also, you know, if they're looking into like Street Pass stuff, this might sound kind of crazy, but wouldn't it be cool if you could sort of make your own small Metroid maps and be able to share those like over friend codes and with Street Pass? You know, I'm throwing it out there, but
it would be awesome. Except apparently, there's nobody on Street Pass.
It just seems like something that would take a really nice advantage of the 3DS features and would be a way, you know, if Metroid is, as a series, is known for being short. The games are very short. You can beat them all in a few hours. So this would be a way for Nintendo to extend that without spending years and years creating tons of content.
I want to move away from specifics and hopefulness and discuss something I am positive about in particular that exists. And that is the concepts that they've developed with the 3DS beyond it being in 3D. I like the Street Pass idea fundamentally. Mm-hmm. I think it's an inventive approach to extending the reach of a game beyond even when it's with you.
Spot Pass is actually kind of exciting.
Yeah,
Spot Pass. It's not implemented yet, but
Spot Pass I'm not so much hyped about because I have Wi-Fi. So right. For me, it's kind of irrelevant. But for people who don't have Wi-Fi, it's kind of helpful.
Well, I'm excited about it in that I think by making Wi-Fi gameplay or at least Wi-Fi, you know, sharing type features or whatever distribution, because it makes that much more accessible to a much greater portion of the population, it's going to encourage developers, including Nintendo, but especially third-party developers, it will encourage them to actually put those features in their games. Whereas on the DS, which has Wi-Fi capability, it's something that you really didn't see all that often.
What makes me happy about this isn't just that these things exist, it's that they had these ideas, these little inventive things that really aren't that revolutionary. But effectively, what Street Pass and Spot Pass do, I did as a research project when I was getting my undergraduate degree. But I never thought about applying it to games. So, you know, I mean, I like that they're embracing this technology, but almost gamifying it as opposed to just putting it in there to have a checkbox checked off.
Hey, one last thing that we can be really happy and excited about, although, again, we don't bring it up that often because there's not that much to say because there's so little information, but Pikmin 3 is supposed to still be coming out. And that is...
Yeah.
I'm very, very excited about that, and it seems like this is the year.
You've said that before.
Yeah, maybe. I probably have, but...
But it is a very specific thing I'm really looking forward to, orchestral music in Skyward Sword, because they've pretty much committed to it. You know,
oh, really?
Saying, well, we did it for Galaxy, so we kind of have to do it for Skyward Sword. I can't wait for that.
That's hot.
I'm happy that they've taken Skyward Sword where they have. I mean, I'm glad they basically said, look, all of you people who got upset that Wind Waker was too colorful and stuff, shove it. Because those people were wrong.
I still like the art style of Skyward Sword. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it looks cool, it looks different, it looks good.
Yeah, I mean, in the direction they've taken that game, where they're basically said, we're going to say, we're going to really use motion controls. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work, but I'm glad they're doing it. Because I don't think any console, even though they all have motion controls now, have really said, let's apply motion controls in a completely broad way to a game.
To a game that you already know how to play.
Right. And
or you think you know how to play.
There's an established method of playing them. And they've already done this once with 2D Zelda games with the Phantom Hourglass. And it's
very successfully.
Yeah, those games are fantastic. And I was I had no faith in that game, to use the term we were discussing, until I played it, and I realized, oh my god, they pulled this off.
The controls in those Zelda DS games are great.
I had to evangelize a friend of mine who is the biggest Zelda fan I know, and I told her, look, this game is really, really good, and it plays really, really well, even without buttons. Mm-hmm. And they became her two favorite Zelda games.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next question, but...
I am a fountain of positivity.
Yeah, Jim, I hope we gave you some things to... You're probably already excited about these things, but I hope we proved to you that, yes, there are things that we are optimistic about and are really looking forward to. And again, we really hope you get well.
John's a fountain of positivity.
Always.
Greg has the next email.
Chad from the Bay Area, California writes, I was listening to a recent Retronauts Live episode, and they were talking about their favourite Street Fighter 2 game among the many different versions. And among all of the games listed by themselves and their live callers, they all missed the correct answer, which is Super NES Street Fighter 2 Turbo plus the Game Genie plus the Air Moves code. For those who didn't have the pleasure of grabbing that Game Genie code out of GamePro, the Air Moves code let you do two things. One, use special moves in the air, not limited to one move per jump, and two, the ability to jump an additional time once you completed a special move. For example, if you used Ken, you could jump and fire off five fireballs before you hit the ground. You could also jump, fire off a single fireball at the highest point of the jump, then jump again starting from that height, rinse and repeat. Most of the time you'd want to stay on screen, but if you wanted, you could keep climbing vertically and fight each other infinitely high into the air. Use your imagination with different characters using different moves and you have one hell of a game. At the time, my dream game would have been a similar 2D fighter, which had a camera that panned up and zoomed in and out with the action. Do you have any fond memories of the Game Genie and or Game Shark? What system? What game? What code?
I never owned either one.
Yes. I actually have an extremely similar experience to Chad here. Mine was with the original Street Fighter 2 for Super NES, so not Turbo. And it was actually a very similar code. I had an NES Game Genie and a Super Nintendo one. I used the Super Nintendo one more, and I actually learned to program my own codes on Super Nintendo Game Genie. Not in a basic level. I didn't really understand what I was doing, but what I found is that if you took codes from Nintendo Power, for instance, and changed one or two letters, you might get a really interesting effect out of it. And over time, you could sort of see these patterns where there were certain, like, say, the third character in the code, that one seemed to govern some aspect of the game, so you could sort of flip through and iterate on that one and see what it did until you found one that was sort of stable and did something cool. And I actually created my own codes for Street Fighter 2, because this is a game that's very easy to test the outcome of what you've done.
Right.
And so I ended up doing something very similar. I had found in a magazine or something, I guess, the air use special moves in the air code, which completely changes how the game is played and is insanely fun. And I spent a lot of time playing this with my friends. And then I was like, well, what if maybe I accidentally typed it in wrong once and I've stumbled upon this, I'm not sure. But at some point, I started messing around with it and I found another code. And this goes back to something we said in New Business, but I found this one code that let you put in the motion of a special move, and then every time you push the final button, like say if you're doing a fireball, you do the fireball motion and then push a punch. Well, if you keep pushing the punch button, he'll keep throwing out more fireballs. And this makes the game totally chaotic and insane. And then messing with that for a while, I found a code that let any character teleport across the screen doing a certain motion combination, which I think was usually like a backwards fireball or something like that. And so any character could do this, and it basically just flipped you to the other side of the screen, which is perfect. I mean, it's surprisingly balanced, and both characters can do it. So the great thing about it is that because this is a symmetrical fighting game in which, you know, the code affects both people the same way, these are essentially like house rules that you can apply with the Game Genie, and they really freshen up the game and let you do all kinds of crazy stuff with it. So I did a ton of stuff like that, and I thought it was super awesome. The other example I can think of is a code for Super Mario 3 on NES that let you play the entire game with the Tanuki suit. And that was fun because you got to use the Tanuki suit in a lot of weird places where you probably would never use it before, which technically you could do anyway, because if you got a suit from a house, then yeah. you could go and select any level on the map and use it there. But in practice, there are only like 3 Tanuki suits in the entire game, and you probably wouldn't be able to do that. So this was a way to basically use things that are already in the game, but use them in a different way, or use them just more of it in an experiment. And there was also a code where you could get Karibo's shoe in any level. Stuff like that is really fun to mess around with. I mean, I was always turned off by infinite lives, infinite ammo, stuff like that. Usually that is not very interesting to play with. But I would always flip through the Game Genie code book and find the codes that just did really bizarre stuff. You know, like Moon Jump in the original Super Mario that lets you jump over the flagpole and get into all kinds of weird buggy shit. So much fun.
No, I never had like Game G or anything like that. There's one case though where like an actual cheat code in the game vastly improved multiplayer for me. I guess a bit like Chad's experience here, which was with Diddy Kong Racing. Now, Diddy Kong Racing, like if you recall, has like this power up structure where like you collect one missile and it's just like a single crappy missile. But if you hold on to it and collect another missile balloon, then mm-hmm. it becomes like a homing missile. And then if you hold on to that and get another one, it becomes 10 missiles. But the thing is, in like, you know, the battle mode kind of setting, that just made everything take too long. You know, it wasn't that chaotic. But if you entered in the cheat that basically meant that any missile power up was the 10 missile one, then it went nuts. And it was actually a lot of fun. Like up to that point, playing that versus playing Mario Kart 64 multiplayer, it was not much of a contest. But once you amped up the craziness, people would actually have fun on Park.
John, James?
I believe I had a Game Shark. I had a Game Shark for something, but I didn't use it too much. I remember vaguely.
I had a Game Genie on the NES that came with the Galoo book that had all the codes they'd already predetermined in there.
Yeah. Galoob manufactured the Game Genie.
Yeah. And one of them I used it on the most was the light gun game, To the Earth, which is really, really hard.
I've never even heard of that game. To the Earth?
Yeah, you're in a spaceship and it's basically a shooter where you're being attacked by a bunch of aliens and you have to go through, I think it's 9 stages, and it's hard. There's a couple codes that I used, but primarily I used the one to not die, because the game is really hard and I would have never seen the ending otherwise. But there was one that I came across that when I shot it, it killed everything. That was kind of fun. I used it in the original Mario game. There was a code to just turn off gravity. So you would jump and just, if there was nothing above you, you were gone.
Yeah.
Bye, Mario.
It makes it really hard.
You're just gone. I mean, you have to like, all right, what can I hit when I jump so I don't go into space? Nothing. I'm screwed.
I think before we move on, we should acknowledge the role of Game Shark, which is basically the same thing.
I'm going to get to that actually, because I have a feeling I know where you're going.
Okay.
I am personally responsible with my Game Shark for the creation and distribution of approximately 100 Mews during the height of the Pokemon Red and Blue era.
That's not what I was going to say, but I'm glad you brought that up.
Good, because it turned every Pokemon you encountered into Mew. I also used one that made it so they sold Master Balls in the shop for 0, and then you could sell them back to them for 1,000,000. So I was like, I'll take 99 of those, and now you can have them back. Oh, thank you. And now I'm going to go catch me a bunch of Mews.
Arbitrage.
I was running like a back alley bartering for Mews. I'm like, I really need one of these right now.
I don't feel like evolving that guy. You got one of those?
I mean, it was shady shit. I was pulling off with those things. They're like, is this legit? I'm like, of course it's not legit. Do you care?
Exactly. It's Pokemon.
You're not going to get one? Oh, it was genius.
There pretty much wasn't a legit way to get Mew
not in the U.S. Not really.
In the U.S. I think they gave out a couple as contest prizes or something, but they were extremely hard to come by.
The only other time I had a Game Shark for the N64. The only time I know I used it a bunch, but the only thing I remember using it for was for Quest 64 so I could just beat that fucking game. I just gave myself all the gems and said, there, screw you, game. You suck, but now you suck and you can't do anything to stop me.
Well, on the subject of N64, I think we have to acknowledge the role that Game Shark played in discovering all the stuff in Banjo-Tooie that was not available. So the giant eggs and the ice key and... Well, actually, that stuff was in Banjo-Kazooie, and then basically they sort of referenced it in Banjo-Tooie, but for the most part, you couldn't actually get that stuff.
All the stop and swap stuff they had planned. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole stop and swap scheme, all the details around that really came out because people were hacking into the code with GameShark and basically finding unused text and unused assets.
And, well, we saw that too in like Ocarina of Time, where you could do the whole the R-Wing flying around Link stuff, and in the debug mode of the GameCube Zelda game, Wind Waker, the big room with all the purple and white squares.
Anyway, let's move on. John has the next email.
Kisaki Project writes, I picked up a 3DS and wanted to share my thoughts with you. I picked up Pilot Wing, Steel Diver, and Bust a Move Universe. Don't hate, you need a puzzle game with a portable.
Not that one, no.
My negative thoughts and concerns with the system would be that while playing Pilot Wings, when you do the plane missions where you shoot and tap the Y button to shoot, if you get too into it, the system jiggles and you lose the 3D effect.
Hot.
This makes me concerned for button-intensive games like Star Fox 64 and Zelda. I don't know how much of this is a programming issue with the 3D and how much is the limitations of the screen. On the other hand, when you play as the turbojet and the air bike and turn sharp or brake and it starts to come out of the screen, it is really incredible. Or the dive into the volcano, holy crap. Steel Diver is pretty cool. I love how Miyamoto was inspired by Steel Battalion to make this. Honestly, the use of touchscreen, motion sensor, and 3D allow you to do an in-depth sim without having to buy the $200 Steel Battalion controller. I don't know why you wouldn't want to buy that. It's amazing.
It is.
That's my editorial comment. What other games do you gentlemen think can be done like this? Personally, I would love to see a really system feature intensive mech sim. Or perhaps a new approach to strategy games. I haven't been wowed by a system like this in a while. I guess the 3D does that, but let's hope it has staying power.
Yeah, I, you know, with the Pilot Wings thing, I kind of had a similar thing, not so much with those shooting bits, but with the shoulder buttons. Whenever I wanted to bank, the system just moved. Like, I guess you just don't really think about it, you know, obviously, because it's not a concern when you're using, like, an old DS Lite or something, that, you know, the way I kind of physically grip the system and then, you know, move my fingers to press the shoulder buttons, the screen would move. And so I just kind of went through a process of training myself not to do that.
That's... I just shifted my fingers along the back of the DS to provide more support for when I push the button there.
Yeah, it's just it's kind of things that you don't notice you were doing because you didn't have to, and now you do and you adjust. I don't think it's a big deal. The shoulder buttons are so small.
They're very small.
Yeah, I don't mind the feel of them, but they're just very, very
they are very
tiny.
My only issue with the feel of the unit is that little plastic nubby bit to make it sit flat on the bottom. They're kind of sharp. But
about the shooting, though, I noticed when I played the demo at Best Buy that if you're flying the plane, the gas is on the A button and the shooting is on the Y button in the opposite corner.
But to be clear, it's not a gas, really. It's a boost. It's intermittent in its use. You don't have to hold it all the time. You can't.
Oh,
it doesn't
really?
Do anything. It accelerates automatically in general. And,
that explains a lot.
So really,
actually.
Really, the acceleration is nice. Acceleration is default. Deceleration or braking or just not accelerating is the button press.
A lot of it, you know, when you're trying to get these 3 stars, completing the mission in the quickest time possible is a big part of that. Prudent use of the boost is the big thing, you know, like so. Because there's certain areas where if you boost at the incorrect kind of time, you know, you'll have to do a sharp turn, you'll end up losing more velocity at the end. You know, you've got to pick your spots. So that's kind of how the boost works into it. Other than that, managing your speed is you're just slowing down to make a sharp turn or something. It's not a big part of the game. But yeah, I mean, these are the kinds of things you're going to go through when you first get your hands on a 3DS. And then from there, it's not a big deal. The one thing I noticed about Pilot Wings, though, slightly different topic, with the ghosting, you know, James talked about ghosting with Rayman, you tend to get ghosting in Pilot Wings in a very specific set of conditions, even when you feel like you're right perfectly on the sweet spot. So say for instance, if you go into one of those caves kind of under the Woohoo Island or whatever, and you've got like a big bright balloon in there, there's pretty much always some kind of trace of ghosting on that because everything's dark except for this huge white balloon in front of your face. And so it's so bright compared to everything else. You can see this, you know, kind of halo effect, this ghosting around it. So, I mean, the thing is, if you had a game with a different aesthetic style, I don't think you'd ever have a problem with that. you know, mm-hmm. where you're not going to have an unnaturally bright object in a dark thing. But then quite a lot of Nintendo games will have stuff like that in them.
Right.
That could also be affected by the brightness setting on your screen.
I have played around with the brightness settings a bit. Like, it's still kind of visible whatever it's on. But yeah, I mean, it kind of varies. Like, I tend to play on the middle brightness, the third one. But yeah, it's just one of these things where I think there's probably always like a tiny sort of trace amount going on, and you're only really going to notice it if it's something with a crazy contrast like that, like a neon balloon in a black cave.
Yeah, I've observed that myself, but I'm not particularly worried about that.
Now, none of us have Steel Diver or have spent a lot of time with it.
It's not out in Europe, and there's no release date that
I
know of.
It's not out in Japan either.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was going to be, but didn't it get bumped because of that?
Yeah, it was delayed.
They had, like, commercials and everything with Japanese people in naval gear that were kind of disturbing.
Yeah, a little bit.
Supposedly it was earthquake-related, that delay.
That's what they've said, and then they put out in a press release saying, this is earthquake-related.
So but, I mean, in terms of something like that, I mean, we talked about when I imported this about a bit ago, a Nintendo-published mech game for the DS, the Chosoju Mecha MG, from the makers of Earth Defense Force. That always seemed like a perfect candidate for a 3DS-type game because, yeah, the slide pad, the circle pad would add a lot to the control of that game. You know, D-pad is a bit crude for the movement, but, you know, it has all these, like, Steel Battalion-like interfaces on the lower screen, which is how it's being used in Steel Diver, and which, of course, was originally a DS kind of tech demo. So, yeah, I mean, Nintendo's already published a game that seems like it would be exactly what Kazaki Project is looking for if it kind of resurrected that mech game on the 3DS, but the chances of it getting out of Japan as ever seem a bit sketchy.
Maybe Capcom will just straight up make a Steel Battalion game for 3DS.
I was thinking a game like Infinite Space, where it's the same kind of deal. All the controls for all your complicated shit is on the bottom.
Hmm.
And they tried to do strategic presentation on the screens of the DS, but it just didn't work right. And they probably could do a much better job this way if they were able to actually do strategic displays in three dimensions.
Yeah, there was a Star Trek game that Bethesda published on DS. I reviewed it a few years ago, and it was similar actually. You had this, you know, these 3D spaceship battles on the top screen. On the bottom screen was a lot of meters and dials that you had to sort of mess with, because that was very similar. I think you could sort of turn and shoot with the main controls, but you had to use the touch screen to do things like manage your shield power and laser power and stuff like that, which actually also reminds me of X-Wing and TIE Fighter.
Yes.
Where there was a lot of, it's an action game, but there's a little bit of simulation in that you're sort of managing, you know, how your power is routed to different systems, and your acceleration is your throttle is managed by a dial that you can sort of turn up and down, so you can get all these very specific levels of thrust. And that could be really cool on 3DS. I think it does work well in that sort of that gray zone between a really arcadey game and that would benefit a lot from the 3D display and the great graphics power, but then also you can do that simulation stuff with a touchscreen.
Ace Combat.
Is Ace Combat really a simulation in any way?
Well, no, but I mean, it's a kind of arcadey actiony stuff, and there are a lot of things you can flip and settings and stuff you can do on them. I mean, part of the problem with those games is you have to kind of manage all these stupid settings and all these headings and things like what weapon system you want to use right now. So at least you could do that. It would be considerably less painful. But I think it would really benefit from things like a 3D display and the ability to put information that normally is taking up real estate.
Yeah, strip the HUD out of the main screen and just whack it all down the bottom.
Right.
Which we've seen with the Star Fox 64 and Zelda 64 remakes.
Right. Yeah. And I think in the case of Star Fox 64, it actually is kind of surprising to look at the game without a big HUD overlay.
With the energy bar and the rings and all that. And of course, like, when the voices come in and stuff, you know, the portraits, I guess, they come down the bottom there, right?
Right.
Before we move on from Star Fox 64, while I'm thinking about it, can we please get some more tank and submarine levels?
Well, that'd be good. Well, submarine's
kind of
slow.
I don't think they're going to make any new levels.
Yeah, I'm good with no more submarine levels. Landmaster, yes. The sub, F it.
The sub is just a little bit unbalanced, and the lighting was really poor in the original version. I think they're probably going to make that much better in the 3DS
Can they make
version.
It faster, though? It's too slow. That level is slow. So slow.
I mean, you have Steel Diver. Isn't that enough?
My problem with
Do you have to ruin another game?
My problem with the submarine level in Star Fox is that you kind of have this feeling that you should be spinning the entire level. And because there's really there's no movement penalty for doing so, whereas you can't really do that in the R-Wing levels because you can't steer as well while
you're kind of off course, so you're going to be crashing into stuff if you're doing it.
So you use it more judiciously, whereas in the submarine, it's basically just slam on the shoulder button for the entire level, and that's not fun. So I think there's some stuff they need to do on it, but that still could be really cool.
It would be great if there were extra. I mean, just more. I mean, if there's more levels.
More levels.
God, I mean, I've kind of leaning towards getting it anyway because I don't like. There's a number of factors here. I don't like replaying it on my N64 because I can't suspend it or anything. You know, and you can't do that on the virtual console either. But I don't really want to get the PAL version because that's screwed up. But I don't want to get the Japanese version because I still wouldn't have heard the voices.
Well, and it doesn't feel that great on the classic controller. I mean, they did that patch for it.
They did that patch to make it worse, yes.
It still doesn't feel quite right.
It's like, hey, let's make the game worse because fans don't like that we made it better.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, if they could just put a few sweeteners in, I'm ready.
Yeah.
You know, I would be happy with just a few Landmaster levels, but ultimately, that game is really enjoyable, and as long as it has, you know, multiplayer modes like the original had, I'll be okay.
Yeah, online score tables. That's because I mean that's one thing. That's going back to Pilot Wings again. You know, I mean it's got a kind of high score element to it, and yet you know you can't even like that could have been at least like the Street Pass thing is like well it just bang it compares your scores.
You just got Dick McDick scores.
Even if you don't want to do on, even if you don't do online, you could at least have that. No, nothing. Mm-hmm. There is no means of comparison at all, which again is a shame. But hopefully, Star Fox is getting because the game's already made in principle. Let's hope that it's getting a little extra attention in those kinds of areas.
Well, one thing though that you know we're discussing this that I was just thinking about. I like how stuff can get pushed in and brought back out, like in Pilot Wings, in the hang glider we were talking about earlier. The things can come in and out based on how fast they're going.
Right.
So in the hang glider, if you're slowing down, it'll actually get bigger and closer.
I think the most impressive one in that kind of sense is the jet plane. When that slows down and you're banking and you know the engines are coming towards the screen, as Kiseki Project describes it, you can actually see the tail section trembling very slightly in the wind, almost like it's a toy plane. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think stuff like that can be done in such a way to enhance what, you know, how it looks and how it feels and give you a better sense of immersion in something like a mech game they were talking about where if you're moving at a really high rate of speed, stuff's going to kind of blur by, whereas if you're moving at a really slow rate of speed, you're going to feel like I'm just kind of hanging out, just chilling.
So, F-Zero, Wave Race, we need
F-Zero might make you sick.
There is a cool sensation of speed, especially in Pilot Wings with the hang glider, because usually you go very slowly. But then there'll be, you know, a mission where you go in the thermal up to some crazy height, and then you descend and then level out, but then, you know, you're gliding around the island at like 100 kilometers an hour or something.
Yes.
And that all of a sudden is thrilling because you've been going so slowly that now it really feels like you're pinging around with not much control. It's great.
Yeah, you're descending at some insane rate of speed and the ground is getting closer to you and you're actually getting further into the screen.
It's good.
All right, so thanks, Kiseki Project. I think you were the only person to respond to my call for 3DS reaction emails.
The rest of you suck.
I do appreciate it. The final email, though, is still 3DS related. It's from Steve in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and he writes this. I have heard preliminary reports that original DS games do not look good on the 3DS due to the widescreen and resolution differences. This really surprises me because in the previous generation, GBA games looked so much better on the DS. What are your experiences with original DS games on the 3DS, and will Nintendo's inevitable second iteration correct this problem?
Yeah, well, I don't know about you, James. I've dabbled with original DS games on there. I would like to be dabbling with Okami Den and using the slide pad, using the circle pad, but I get jerked around by the people I order that from, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, with the ones I've tried, obviously the point is the 3DS screens are significantly higher resolution, even the touchscreen on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which isn't what we originally led to believe. We originally led to believe it's the same stupid screen on the bottom that it is on, like, the DSi.
They're higher res, so what's happening is you're basically your DS games in the default display mode get blown up, in effect. They get kind of up-resed, and what happens in this process is that they look soft.
Right.
They don't look crisp anymore, even though the physical size of the screens is smaller than a DSi, I think. And obviously far smaller than an XL.
It's about the same size as a DS Lite.
Yeah. So it's not actually being blown up to a bigger physical size, but because of the resolution difference, it looks kind of soft. Now, I think the difference between that and what happened with GBA games on DS in original resolution format, you know, it'd be a box around it, a black box. But the thing is, that black box wasn't that big. Like, the resolution difference wasn't that huge. So the GBA game would still take up quite a large portion of a DS screen. So you didn't feel like, oh, I'm straining to see it or anything. Whereas you do have the option to display your DS games in their sort of native resolution, but on these higher resolution screens. But what that creates is a sort of Game Boy Micro effect here, where it looks really crisp, but it takes up a small proportion of the screen.
Do you remember how to trigger that effect?
It's start and select buttons as you boot up the game.
So I'm doing it. So I just launched Disgaea, which is, you know, it's a sprite-driven game. Sharpness is really important, and it does look very blurry. But, I mean, it's certainly still playable, but it is blurry.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it will look soft if you play it in the normal mode. It'll look nice and sharp if you play it on the,
but it's very tiny.
Pixel for pixel, but it's small. So, yeah, that's not great either. So it's kind of like pick your poison with that. So it's not brilliant for playing original DS games, I guess. But for me, I mean, the softness is not a huge issue.
No, I mean, I plan on keeping my XL anyway.
Oh, I'm definitely keeping my light. I mean, it's a Triforce edition, all that kind of stuff.
The thing for me is my DS Lite's a little beat up at this point. It's just I've used it so heavily that the touchscreen really is kind of in bad shape. It's sort of the top layer is sort of separated from the screen itself, and it, you know, so you can actually feel it depress when you use the stylus on it.
Right.
The hinge feels like it's a little shaky. There's just, you know, the battery life's not that great on it anymore because I've charged it so many times. So
right.
I'm interested in replacing my DS Lite. And based on the sort of issues with 3DS because of the resolution difference, I'm actually starting to feel like money being no object. So at some point in the distant future when I have plenty of money to throw around, I'm actually thinking of going with a kind of a combo of 3DS and an XL.
You will not regret the XL.
The ultimate way to experience old DS games.
And the funny thing is, the XL has a huge screen, so you'd think the softness would be there too, and it is a little bit, but it's not so bad. You know, I kind of thought, well, there'll be softness, but I have an XL, I'm used to that. But it is noticeably different than the XL.
It's not so much softness, it's a graininess. Because the thing is, the resolution of the XL is the same as on any other DS. It's just the pixels are
but
larger.
But it's still a loss of sharpness.
Well, if you back up, it's not. So
yes, if I
depends
put the
on
XL...
how close you are to the screen.
Yes, if I hold the XL fully extended out, yes, it won't look
different.
But
the thing is, it's not interpolating, which is what causes that blurriness that you guys are talking about on 3DS. Because it's having to fill in extra pixels with stuff that's not actually in the software. And so that's why it's making it have that kind of soft look to it, because it's just creating color gradients, basically. And on the XL, it will never have to do that. It has the same native resolution. The pixels are just physically larger. And, you know, I know that drives some people crazy, like Pale, but from what I've seen, when I've seen an XL, I think it looks awesome. And I'm starting that opens up the weird conundrum, though, of, you know, this same effect is probably going to apply to DSiWare.
Yes, original. So, yeah, if you once they put the eShop up, You're going to buy a DSi, and then that's it for me. I haven't got a DSi, so that's the only way I can play those games, and they'll
So you're going to have to deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, I can deal with it. It's not a huge deal, but it's not ideal either, yeah.
Right. So if my plan is to get the combo and replace my DS Lite with an XL and a 3DS, then I have the option of getting DSiWare on the XL where it'll look great, or I could get it on the 3DS where it's a little more conveniently managed with a lot
of... You're forgetting something, though, but in this parallel world where money is no object, you can get it on both.
I can buy it twice? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's a huge issue because there aren't that many DSiWare games I would want to buy.
This is why I do this show, because I've seen the future, and one day Johnny will be mega rich and most of the world will be uninhabitable and we'll all be living on Asteroid JM.
Nice.
I'll have become rich making the world uninhabitable. I am Lex Luthor from Superman Returns.
Yep.
All right. Very good question, Steve. It'll be interesting as time goes on to see, like, how much do people care about this? Because, you know, you talked about playing GBA games on my DS, and I know that I did it, but I can't actually remember any games that I primarily played on my DS.
I did it a lot, but that's because I didn't have an SP.
Okay, see, yeah. I had an SP, and I still use my SP occasionally. So if I want to play a GBA game, even though I have a Lite, you know, playing GBA games on your Lite isn't that great because it sticks out from the bottom and everything. Mm-hmm. So if I'm playing a GBA game, I'll bust out my SP.
And your SP could play old Game Boy games if you have any.
That's right. Yes. SP is a system worth keeping around.
Oh, I wish I had the NES one.
Yeah.
Because of that, I wonder if a lot of people will want to hang on to a DS of some kind, of whatever flavor you prefer, to keep playing DS games.
I mean, one thing I will say is, to go to Steve's question again, I don't think a hardware revision is going to really fix this. I mean, I guess it's conceivable that that process of kind of uprating and interpolating could be, you know, refined. And
that could be done with... That could potentially be done with firmware updates.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. A hardware revision could help in the sense that if they make the screens larger, like they did with XL, for even DSi has slightly larger screens.
Then if you do the pixel-for-pixel mode, it's bigger.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you use the native resolution mode on 3DS Lite, or 3DS XL, or whatever, if it has larger screens, then using that native resolution mode will make it look more like playing it on an original DS Lite or whatever. All right, that is going to do it for emails, so please send in your letters for next week. The address, once again, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Please do it now before you forget. We would love to hear from you. Of course, we have new episodes of the newscast. They go up every week. Those actually go out the day before RFN, so I'm not sure what's on the newest episode. I'm sure there will be a lot more 3DS coverage, and I'll probably be talking about some of the Virtual Console and Xenoblade announcements that we've been discussing as well. So for more info, go check out the newscast. I wanted to plug a couple things on Crosstalk that I've been involved with lately. I had recently an episode of Discover Music Project that went up with Andy Gergen from the newscast, and we talk about the Decemberists, which is a pretty interesting band, and in a couple weeks, we have another episode going up with the two of us. So please do check that out if you're interested in hearing some music. And I recorded a very special podcast for Crosstalk with Evan Birchfield, the co-founder of Radio Free Nintendo. You heard him just a couple weeks ago. Evan and I did a 2.5-hour DVD commentary track for David Lynch's film Dune. And I would say, I bring this up because, of course, it's a treat to hear Evan when you get a chance. He doesn't do that much anymore in terms of podcasts. But also, if you're not that familiar with Dune, I think it does kind of have a special appeal maybe for people who are interested in video games. And it is it's based on a science fiction novel. It's a very famous film adaptation. Notorious is probably the best word for it. Film adaptation. And it's something that I've been interested in for a long time. And Evan and I both have kind of a mutual admiration and fascination with that movie. So we talked about it for over 2 hours, and I would love to get some feedback from RFN listeners and anyone else who actually tries syncing it up with the DVD and actually listens to it. I'd love to hear what you think, because it's so niche. I mean, it is maybe the geekiest thing I've ever done, and that's saying a lot. And so I would appreciate some validation or at least some critical feedback on it, because it's such a weird project. So anyway, that's also over at crosstalk.com. That's crosstawk.com. Check it out. You can rate and review this show on iTunes. Hit us up on facebook.com/radiofreenintendo. I'm posting shit on Twitter all the time, at Johnny Metz with no H. And finally, we get down to the retroactive announcement, our grand jury selection. I now hand the microphone to Greg Leahy to make the announcement.
Well, before I let everyone know what the next retroactive game is going to be, I just want to say that it is with great reluctance that I've agreed to this calling. I love democracy. I love retroactive. The power you give me, I will lay down once this RPG crisis has abated.
RPG crisis?
So, as my first act with this new authority, we're going to play The Legend of Mystical Ninja for Super Nintendo.
Dun, dun, dun. Go him all.
I'm still kind of in awe from RPG Crisis, to be honest.
Nothing surprises me anymore.
It was an incredible streak of RPGs. And Greg, this is not a unilateral decision by Greg.
Not really.
We had a coalition of the willing. The rest of us are willing to play The Legend of Mystical Ninja. I've played it before, so it'll be fun to try it again. And it's available on Virtual Console for $8.
I think the Virtual Console release is actually sufficiently old that it could be considered retro in itself compared to stuff like The World Ends With You and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was one of the older Virtual Console games early on in the Wii life cycle. So yeah, I hope some people will be interested in following along with this. Check out the forums. There will be a thread by the time the show goes up. And we'll try to get a discussion going. It is a very unusual game. Some of you might be more familiar with the N64 game, which has all the songs and the weird giant robot battles and stuff like that. There are elements of that. Parts of the game are reminiscent of Zelda in terms of they're sort of adventure-y, they're sort of like three-quarters view. And then it goes into these side-scroller levels that are a little bit like Hatsworth, actually. Kind of like a Mega Man game with mostly melee stuff. The game definitely has a bizarre sense of humor, nice presentation, good graphics and music for an early Super Nintendo game. So I hope people will be interested in it, and let us know what you think. Hit up the forum thread and leave your thoughts there, and I hope you'll play along with us. So we'll get started on that either next week or the week after. Stay tuned for more details on the scheduling of that. And then, as Greg said, sometime after this, we will return to the voting process for retroactive.
Sure, we will.
That's it for the show, folks. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
I think in the case of Star Fox 64, it actually is kind of surprising to look at the game without a big HUD overlay.
With the energy bar and the rings and all that. And of course, like when the voices come in and stuff, you know, the portraits, I guess, they come down the bottom there, right?
Right.
I hope so, because, I mean, all that stuff can be so distracting with the 3D effect.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they've shown screenshots of it with the, you know, with the, where they have the two screens in the shot, and you know, you've got like Falco or whatever on the lower screen. So
I need some help over here, Fox.
Yeah.
I think they should. You know what they should? That would be my request for an addition to Star Fox 64. So have the options to have the Super NES garbage as their voice instead.
Instead of, shouldn't Falco really be saying like, "Fox, I'm so much better than you, but I keep getting shot down every mission."
Well, to be fair, they do go after him because he is so much better.
Oh, okay. He draws the fire.
He's the ace.
He's getting triple
My
coverage,
ass.
You know. The TO of the group.
He's a decoy.
He's the only member of the team who has any business flying anyway.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I had the Japanese version. He does say, I love me some me at some point, doesn't he?
I love me some me? I don't remember that.
That's TO.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I was about to say, like,
I'm kind of sad. I'm the only one who got that.
It's where football and Star Fox meets right here on our podcast.
It's the only football any of us are getting for a while.
Yeah.
That's not true. I still have college.
You suck.
Wait, your buddy, go away.
Have you heard the stories of the experiments where people wear these helmets that use mirrors to make them see everything upside down? And over the course of 6 to 8 weeks, I think, their brain slowly learns to adjust the image so that they reinterpret it and they stop seeing things upside down. Like, it just slowly, it all kind of clicks, and they get, in other words, they get used to it. But after a while, they don't think of things being upside down. Basically, their brain just flips it so that it looks normal to them. And then if you take the helmet off...
What kind of sick bastard came up with that study?
It's an amazing experiment on your brain's adaptation to sensory input. But yeah, if you get used to that over the course of like 2 or 3 months, and then you suddenly take the helmet off, you'll see everything upside down.
So you're saying Nintendo's building a chemical dependence on the 3DS. Ladies and gentlemen, don't get a 3DS. You'll become addicted.
Yep.
Everything will look flat after months.
The more you know, James.
The more you know. It's too late for me, man. Just don't fall into the same trap.
I always knew one day I would use you as a cautionary tale.
Well, it's about time that I did return the favor.
Yes. All right.